The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. We want to let members of the audience know this evening that we're adjusting our usual meeting format, which includes public participation prior to the start of the meeting. Tonight, we will begin our meeting with a presentation on the think tank, and following that presentation, we will allow audience participation for feedback. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Board member Steve Vondrak is not able to attend the meeting in person due to an employment-related obligation. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Vondrak notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in this meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Vondrak's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
I would like to motion Mr. Vondrak to the meeting.
Thank
Second.
You. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Ms. Kenwood?
Yes.
Ms. Bowers?
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Dollar.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Yes. Mrs. Secker, please call it. Oh, sorry. Let's call Steve. I thought he was on. Do a roll call, Steve. Mrs. Secker, please call the roll.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Vondrak?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Nelson?
Here. Welcome, Steve. The board has determined that it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. The appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. The purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion. Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Vondrak?
Steve?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes. Welcome, everyone. As you noticed on the agenda, I'm sure we opened our meeting early tonight at 6:45 and went immediately into closed session. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, everyone. I hope that there's some seats as you come in. Please feel free to find a place to lean or a chair. We welcome you to come in and kind of fill in this part, too, so that you can hear as well. So welcome. Steve Vondrak was already roll called into the meeting electronically. He's on a employment and had told the superintendent's office that he would want to call in. So we welcomed him in earlier today. All right, welcome back to open session. Our first action item, the approval of the 2012-2016 Teachers Agreement between District 41 Board of Education and Glen Ellyn Education Association, GEA. May I have a motion to approve the 2012-2016 Teachers Agreement with the Glen Ellyn Education Association in substance, as presented in the February 22, 2013 memorandum from the board's bargaining team, and to authorize the president and secretary to sign the agreement after final assembly, review and approval of the agreement by the bargaining team, and after signature by the GEA co-presidents. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. We just discussed this, and
well, I would say, as a member of the bargaining team, that I'm very proud of this agreement. I'm very proud of our team. I'm very proud of the GEA team. They were all very civil. I think we met all of our interests in this agreement. And I especially would like to give kudos to our superintendent and our board attorney and our other staff members. who know who they are, who are part of the board team in the negotiations.
Thank you, Stan. And I would like to, on behalf of the board, formally thank the committees involved. They are, again, as Sam mentioned, Sam Black from the board, Dan Smith from the board, Dr. Reebok, Bob Cicerella, our Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Facilities, Lori Campbell, our Director of Human Resources, and our Board Attorney, Tom Faulkner, and Phyllis Hanna, our Director of Business. For our GIA team, Brian Bonkowski, who was the Chief Negotiator, Sue Schoaf, Jeannie Kamelik, Allison Koss, Tammy Allen, and Renee Rabicchini, who is the IEA Uniserve Director and their advisor. So thank you very much. Thank you, Sam. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondrack?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you very much. All right, under presentations, reports, and initiatives, think tank recommendation and discussion.
We are back after the board asked us to give further consideration to the think tank proposal made in November 26th. And before I turn this over to Karen Carlson and each of the buildings, I just want to put a little bit of context back into where this work came from. As board members know, we operate from the long-range plan, which is a five-year plan designed to keep the future in front of us. And this particular plan, which comes from the continuous improvement team in collaboration with the administration and with the board, really focuses on moving the organization to a 21st century learning organization. And so one of the first pieces under goal one, which is the teaching and learning goal, the action of the long-range plan charged the administration to form a group to begin to look at 21st century learning and what does the organization need in order to meet the needs of students in a changing educational paradigm. What does it mean to educate students when we have increased diversity within our student population, a desire to meet the global market, and knowing that the Common Core is coming to us and that that has an increased rigor to us. So the action that formed Think Tank 18 months ago was tied to the goal one of our long-range plan and to the whole organization in terms of moving us forward. And so while there are many pieces to that, this is the work that they've been doing and believed from their charge from the board and from the long-range plan that bringing something forward to represent 21st century learning was their basic charge. And Karen, I'll turn it over to you. We don't plan on going back to the November 26th presentation, but to present to you the conversations and the information that has ensued since the November 26th presentation.
There are a couple more seats kind of up front.
There's four right here.
There's an open seat. Why don't you raise your hand? So
if there's an open seat next to you, raise your hand.
At least more people can sit then. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. Hopefully, everyone can hear as well. So the board report that you received highlighted the work with the accompanying dates that's occurred since late November, early December. You also received a number of accompanying handouts tonight. They're in the purple file folder there. I'll refer to some of them throughout the evening, but those are also posted on the Think Tank website as well. So tonight I'll provide you with some additional information, and then you'll have an opportunity to hear from each of the individuals. So many people have asked the reasons for the change, and this highlights some of those reasons. First of all, the range of our students needs, it continues to grow and widen. The next generation science standards will place a greater emphasis on engineering and the integration of math. The Common Core expectations are higher and more rigorous. And finally, the need we have to be a 21st century teaching and learning organization. Here's another example. It further highlights the need that we see for us to change, or at least to do something different. So as you know, Illinois restored the 2012 ISAT to approximate more rigorous scoring that's coming. So D41, like many districts, experienced the drop in our scores by an average of about 10 points. In addition, we saw a drop in the exceed category. So if you can kind of look, we have reading on the left-hand side and math on the right-hand side, and that is by grade level. And if you won't not be able to see the specific numbers, but as you can see, the colored band, this was an exceed, this is the new exceed, this was meeting, here's the new meeting. This was our numbers below, this is now below, and then this was academic warning, that's the new academic warning. And then you kind of see that across the board in each of those areas. But generally speaking, 40 to 50% of our students are no longer meeting on the ISAT. In addition, this year the state is adding approximately 20% new Common Core questions to the test. So this adds even greater concern regarding the impact on our scores. We know that the Common Core expectations are at least one grade level higher. So in light of that data, one of the questions we've asked ourselves is how do we get to that increased rigor of the Common Core by continuing to do what we do when the achievement gap continues to grow? This talks a little bit about the rationale for kind of the different components around the proposal. In regards to multi-age, we hope to build upon what we've already been doing through small group instruction, but also allow for more personalized learning environments. In the area of specialization, we feel that the greater pedagogical knowledge will translate to deeper instruction for our kids. In regards to integration, we know that reading and writing cuts across all content areas, and that will continue. The aid that we've identified in STEAM will allow for the integration of arts, but not specific just to that STEM portion. We know there'll be opportunities to integrate the arts in literacy as well, but none of that precludes the integration of all subject areas. In regards to the structure of the day, we're looking for that greater flexibility within teaching blocks to meet both the instructional needs of the subject matter as well as the needs of the students. One of the accompanying documents you received talks about the student placement process. And so the next few slides are going to highlight some things in regards to that student placement, but also it connects to the multi-age concept. So when we looked at our data, we saw the overlap of scores. And with this, and as long as you can see the difference in colors, but this is our fall math data. Again, math just one data point of our current fourth and fifth graders. Fourth graders are in blue, fifth graders are that orange and red color. So when you look at that, hopefully it illustrates for you what we mean when we talk about, but you can see all of that overlap, the connections between the blue and the yellow. So can you go to the next slide? When you look at this particular slide, what we're trying to do is illustrate what we mean by creating those heterogeneous multi-age classes. We would pull clusters of like learners along that continuum from the middle and at both the right and left ends of that, along the kids as well. So you'll notice that the difference between the grade levels is not that great. There's a lot of overlap. The multi-age increases the sample size. It still allows for a diverse group of learners. It narrows the band of diversity. And then all kids have like learners. So currently, if you pulled out just the blue, you would look at how that spans from this end to that end. By increasing that sample size, you can still create those like learners. These kids would be on the fringe. We'll still have like learners when we cluster them. On the next two slides, I'm going to show just another way of looking at it. In the student placement process, we talked about using Mountain Sentinel data and math data as a further checkpoint. Here's another way of just illustrating what we mean by creating heterogeneous group of students. This shows an example of a fourth grade class and a fifth grade class. Each teacher has about five reading groups, 24 students, and that represents their different reading levels. By combining grade levels to increase your sample size and increasing the number of potential classes for kids to be placed into, you can get this particular example of a cluster. So you're down to three reading groups, but still within a range of reading levels, a diverse levels represented in here. But again, three clusters. Now, a couple people have asked, what happens when, if my child starts making progress in reading those kinds of things? And they're moving up to a new reading level. We know that most students progress at a similar rate over the course of the year. So they would be moving along with their grade level peers in their classroom, and by grade level I mean that grade level band. They continue to make that progress, but if kids were to jump for whatever, any number of reasons, they would have another group to enter into. But all of those kids would continue to adjust and grow over the course of the year. So we feel like we could keep them relatively stable groups that would keep progressing. So I mentioned there is that whole document in there that talks about specifically the student placement process. You'll notice in there that we're talking about a placement process for literacy and a placement process for math, because we know that not all of our students are like learners in both literacy and math. And in a couple of slides, I'll talk a little bit more about what will happen in regards to math. But I want to go back to multi-age for just a couple minutes, because this has come up in a lot of our conversations with both parents and staff and that. And this really highlights for you what we mean when we talk about multi-age, what it is and what it isn't. In some of the more recent meetings, we talked about that distinction between multi-age and multi-grade. In multi-grade settings, it often refers to things you'll hear like combination classes or split classes, where the teacher is trying to teach two separate grade level curriculum within that classroom. And that's not what we are suggesting. We're suggesting the multi-age concept. And when we reviewed the research, we had that lens to it as well. The next slide talks a little bit about math, and I want to spend a little bit of time on this because this is an area of what we're presenting tonight is different information than what you heard back in November. You do have about a 1.5 page handout that explains this in greater detail around those math changes. And I want you to note that these math changes are not specific to think tanks. They're also the result of the increased rigor of the Common Core. What we're suggesting in math is that we will compact the K-2 math curriculum at grades K and 1, and then we're going to accelerate all of our students at grades 2-5 by 1 year using the Everyday Math as the primary resource. We know that there's going to be gaps. Those are going to be identified. We'll have many units that are created to support the students as they make that transition to the Common Core. The one thing I want you to keep in mind, though, too, is next year we have the old science curriculum. New science standards aren't out until May, so we won't be seeing changes in that. So what we're hoping with teachers in that STEM block of time for next year is that they'll have that greater flexibility to flex that time, take the extra time they need to give to math to help kids with this transition of that increased rigor. They'll also be doing guided math, which allows for further differentiation of underneath their needs, and then the ability to access that win time, whether it be for intervention or just help with scaffolding some of that. We think by identifying those mini units, teachers will know kind of when to pre-teach, kind of fill in where the skill deficits might be as we accelerate our curriculum. We also know that we have students who are significantly below grade level, and they will receive a compacted Common Core curriculum. We have kids currently who come to us who might be 2, 3, maybe even more years below grade level in math. It's not realistic to expect them year by year to get through every level of the everyday math curriculum. It would take far more years than what we can give them within their elementary experience, which is why we want to compact a Common Core curriculum to just kind of accelerate their growth and get them to grade level as quickly as possible. The reason why we kind of feel this is part of phase one is our teachers are already familiar with everyday math as a resource. So we believe this transition is going to be more seamless for them and the students, and it'll further prepare them, the teachers, for that increased rigor of the Common Core from an instructional perspective. So just to kind of highlight, kind of phase one, 13-14 school year, STEAM or math is not multi-age that first year. We're going to adjust and accelerate that math curriculum to the Common Core. And they're still going to have the old science curriculum, kind of for lack of a better word. So, now this kind of highlights then from a phase two, phase three, looking ahead. So remember, phase one, 13-14 school year, we're accelerating the curriculum for all kids, K through five, basically. We have the old science curriculum. The new standards will be out in May. Over the course of next year, the new STEM/STEAM curriculum would be developed using those new standards. The professional development would be identified and provided. But from an instructional perspective, we're not expecting those STEM or STEAM teachers to be implementing that new curriculum first year. As that new curriculum around STEM or STEAM is written, we'll be strategic and purposeful in how we integrate the math Common Core standards into that curriculum. So that allows us in year two, the 14-15 school year, the teachers will be implementing that new STEM curriculum. They're going to be doing the same thing they've done as year one in math, but you also have the new PART assessment. And then we would hope we could move to literacy being multi-age at grades two and three at all of our schools, 4-5, we continue. So then in the following year, the 15-16 school year, what we would hope is that we could move math also to multi-age for kind of an authentic standards approach at those grades 2 through 5. So we could build teacher capacity over the course of the first 2 years to transition into that our third year. The other thing that has come up is, you know, what's going to happen at Hadley. Hadley will also experience a new STEM curriculum aligned to the Common Core standards. The Hadley science teachers have an interest in looking at that next summer, once the standards are out in May, and to begin doing some of that implementing in a year. Remember, they just focus on science. It's a little bit easier to make that shift. But we'll also be looking at kind of retrofitting their science lab to become STEM lab for the following year, so that need will occur. And Hadley's also in the process right now of looking at new Common Core resources around the area of math, and our AEC teachers have been working with them as well. One last comment about the AEC math curriculum, and that's our accelerated math curriculum. It used to be known as gifted. That will continue for our students who are currently in the program. And then students at grade three will also have an opportunity for all students an acceleration of 1 year, and then students who can accelerate 2 years. Currently, we don't accelerate our third graders 2 years along the way. As far as the individual school plans, each of the buildings is going to share both their individual plan and then kind of a highlight of their facility. But each of the schools develop their proposals that look at the needs and the readiness of their staff, and they're going to talk a little bit about that story as we go through. And I believe
Karen, before Mary gets started, I just want to make one comment about language, and that is the difference between pilot and partial implementation. And we've heard from people, you know, different definitions of pilot and the definitions we've used as educational institutions. And so We think for our purposes this evening, the term pilot is not one that really reflects what we're talking about, but partial implementation. And so we won't be using that language that we're piloting something so that there's no confusion what we're talking about. What will each school do based in the whole recommendation that came to you in November? And now what are pieces of that, or the parts that are going to come to you via each of the schools? So just to clarify with the board. Sarah, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm okay.
Any questions on that?
Not yet.
On partial implementation.
There will be when we see the recommendation.
Right, exactly. But I just wanted questions on the definition.
Right.
And we'll let the schools get all the way through their recommendations before we open it up for board discussion. Okay, Mary.
Good evening. We have been working as a think tank group, both as a district group, but also as a building group. So tonight I have Stacy Stout, our literacy coach, and Ralph Puccini, our ENL teacher here, who have been members of the think tank since think tank started, and they're going to assist with the presentation tonight.
Okay, just some background before we go into our slides. Last year, after attending biweekly think tank meetings, the think tank talking points were shared with our staff during our staff meeting. This fall, think tank participants met more frequently for think tank. Therefore, our staff received more frequent updates. Our staff also participated in informational sessions with Karen and Ann. Teachers had the opportunity to ask questions at monthly grade level meetings and at staff meetings. Parent communication updates took place in the forms of PTA meetings, Forest Glen 101 in December and January, district update meetings, and the building-based question-answer session at Forest Glen in January. Our next building-based meeting will be held either on March 5th or 7th. In January, staff had the opportunity to come and talk to Mary privately about their thoughts surrounding think tank, specialization, and multi-age. Teachers shared their preferences. We discussed regarding this and took place in the December, January, and February grade level meetings for the discussion regarding this. And then at the end of January, our staff took a survey on their readiness, and Think Tank went back as each building analyzed their own building's data, and we drew some conclusions, but we also had questions. So based on that, I met with grade level teams again, and we also met as a 4-5 group and a 2-3 group to talk about, honestly, open and honestly, about our readiness to do all of the plan, part of the plan, none of the plan for next year. So in our discussions, what came out of that was grade 2 wanted to specialize. And based on staffing, we currently have 3 sessions of second grade, so we're trying to work out, coming up, so we're trying to work out how we would specialize with 3 groupings. But they are, the second grade team is very interested in specializing for next year. As is our third grade team, they feel that they are ready to go. And as we talked with our fourth and fifth grade teachers, they're ready to take on the plan with multi-age and with specialization for next year. They're very comfortable with moving forward with that. And then we worked as a staff on our building plan. Our kindergarten and first grade is in yellow. We're clustering them together. We also have, and they're up in this area here. So this is first grade, kindergarten, preschool. The preschool is still where it is now. And then with second and third grade, we want to specialize for next year, but we wanted to cluster for the future, for the following year, where we feel like we'd be ready to go multi-age. And so we identified this area as our math STEAM area of the building, and then this area would be our literacy. So our 2-3 literacy would be clustered, as would our 2-3 math STEM. And then for fourth and fifth grade, literacy would take place in the portables, and then our STEAM area with math would be along the west edge of the building. And then we'd be looking to put in a math lab and a literacy lab for our wind time.
and ELL would have its own space to give us the foundation. So that's our plan and as we've developed it thus far.
Had a nice showing of teachers here from Lincoln School today, and I'm sharing our plan with you tonight. I want to talk to you a little bit about how we came to our proposal, and I want to start by saying that all throughout the course of the school year, we've been having updates at our faculty meeting each month, twice a month actually. And then we did the staff survey, and I think this is an important place for me to start. Because what we found with after the staff survey was done and we took a look at the data, one of the first things we recognized is we had some discrepancies in our data. And we brought that, we talked about that at a staff meeting. What had happened is that we had more teachers that responded in a grade level than we had grade level teachers. And so we knew at that point that, and the teachers were like, they're not comfortable with the discrepancy. We really needed to find out what people were feeling before we could move forward. And so I met with the VIA representative in our school, met with me and said, well, how are we going to clear this up? And they had suggested that they go ahead and do an independent independent survey of all of our staff to find out exactly where, so that we are able to look at clean data and not making assumptions based on that data. And so a non-classroom teacher, as a VIA rep, went and asked all of our classroom teachers for their input, and from that we were able to have better professional conversations. It was clear that our four or five teachers were strongly in favor of moving forward with the full implementation. Our second and third, we had strong input from third grade, and second grade had a lot of questions that still needed to have answered. So I met with each grade level team independently and talked about and asking them if there are any, what components they'd like more information on, was there anything that they were not clear about, if there was any component that they were comfortable moving forward with, or maybe there wasn't anything at all. And so those conversations happened. And I asked them to continue the conversations in their professional learning communities, and they did that without me. Each grade level met and had those deep professional conversations. And again, I want to point out that those meetings occurred with no administration in the room. Grades 2 and 3 teachers then scheduled time to meet with me again to discuss, as did the 4 or 5 teachers. The 4 or 5 teachers decided, the 4th and 5th grade teachers decided to meet together, to discuss together their ideas. And they did that, and they came back feeling very strongly they're ready to go and move forward with it. The second and third grade teachers also decided they wanted to meet together, grade 2 and grade 3, to talk about the proposal and what it would mean for them and their children. They then followed up by asking me to attend a lunchtime meeting where we could sit down and kind of talk about some of the questions they still had. And we did that, and we talked, and questions were answered. And the two, three teachers decided that they wanted to move forward with full implementation also. And it's important to know that at this point we were not aware of what any of the other schools were doing because all the schools were in this process at the same time. A follow-up staff meeting was then held with all of our staff who were, it was announced that to meet, and we shared this plan with our staff, and there was a chance for staff to ask questions. At that point we also shared our building plan, so we had an idea of what we're looking to next following year. Now, we, the Lincoln staff, know that this decision disappoints some of our parents, and we also know that it's met with favor for many of our parents also. And so we want to take this time to address some of the main concerns that we've heard when we've met with parents and we've heard when we come to attend these meetings to help you understand why we decided to bring this proposal forth today. One concern that we've heard over and over again is the need for professional development in order to implement this type of change. The Lincoln teachers have been asked what PD they needed. And the number one thing that's come up over again is we need time to meet to begin planning the logistics that go along with this change. additional time to create classes designed to meet the needs of kids where they're at, and to include clusters of students working at different levels. We want time to do that well. The STEAM teachers need some math support as they roll out this new rigor and expectations for our kids. However, this acceleration and this need for professional development would happen regardless, because the need for us to raise the expectation for our kids is going to happen, whether this proposal goes through or not. Prospective STEAM teachers said they would need some PD in the areas of engineering and teaching STEAM over the course of the next year and a half, so they're ready for the 2014-15 rollout. They would like to begin integrating basic engineering principles next year into their science curriculum. Prospective literacy teachers said they would like to talk to educators working in multi-age classrooms and visit some multi-age classrooms. And the good news that we feel we have here at Lincoln, and probably in many schools across the, and all the schools across the district, is that we've been using the curriculum framework and instructional strategies that support this change for several years now. We do guided math and guided reading. We do writer's workshops. We have targeted learning time. We have students right now changing teachers and classrooms for math and literacy instruction. And we do grades 3 through 5 literacy modules. These things are things that we're already doing. We don't need professional development in these areas. This raises the content level of all of us and decreases the need for extensive PD as we can focus on the more structural kind of changes that need to take place. Our school as a whole functions as a professional learning community, and we embrace the collaborative model, another key area that supports us as we move forward. Another concern that we've heard addressed is transition time and how that will be increased. And we don't see how that's going to increase it any more than it already is. Our kids are moving and changing classrooms quite frequently through the day. We've heard parents say, there's too many loose ends. How will parent conferences work? What about parties? How about our fifth grade events? Well, these things are important. And as a staff, we're committed to keep the best of Lincoln in place. Some things, like parent conferences, are already being discussed. And as a side note, our fifth grade teachers have already begun conversations with our fourth grade teachers about the fifth grade team, about graduation, and other fifth grade events. Those things are going to stay in place. Parents have asked us, how will teachers be able to bond with all these students? They won't know my child well, and my child won't feel special. Well, we believe that the key to building strong, positive relationships is not the amount of time you spend with a child, but rather it's the amount of what you do at that time, how you interact, how you communicate, and how you show you care. I think we do a really good job of that in Lincoln School, and we feel that we're able to do that. Parent concern talked about teachers not being multi-age literacy and how that will impact the social emotional needs of our kids. And all I can say is here is our commitment to you. We will continue to build strong, positive communities in our classrooms. We will work to build a sense of team among our students. We will have increased awareness regarding the social emotional needs of our kids, and we will communicate any concerns that arise. We will seek out social emotional resources to support teachers and students with this change. Why the rush? It's going too fast. Why fix something that's not broke? We appreciate your vote of confidence. However, we know our students as a whole in the school. We know their needs. We know the limitations of our current system. And we want something better. We struggle to fit everything in. The range of our students' needs increase every year. Starting from second grade to fifth, the range becomes greater and greater. We want to better meet the needs of our students. The Common Core standards rolled out several years ago. The Common Core math core standards rolled out. The Common Core science standards have rolled out or will be rolling out soon. These increased expectations are not District 41 expectations. And they're not Lincoln School expectations. It's a national initiative, and it's not an option. We need a system that allows us to meet our students where they are at and moving forward. As teachers of your children, We feel a sense of urgency. And our number one concern that we've heard over and over again is teachers are not on board. Our grades 2 to 5 teachers had deep professional conversations and weighed all the pros and cons of this think tank proposal. This implementation plan came down from them. Next slide. So we shared with staff the building layout that we're looking at doing for next year. Our plan is to keep the grades 4 and 5 pretty much where they're at right now. The grades 2 and 3 will be clustered around the LLC. First grade and kindergarten will also remain where they're at. Labs will be set up at our current teacher staff lounge, our computer labs, and several other open areas within the small group open areas in the school. We'd like to have two classrooms dedicated for science labs, our STEM lab, and they would be, one would be a 4-5 and one would be a 2-3. So I think in closing, I just want to share a comment that was made by a teacher, a non-think tank teacher, recently, and he's here actually today. He said, I haven't been this fired up about teaching since my very first year as becoming a teacher, and I can't wait. Thank you.
Good evening. We've also taken similar steps as the other buildings with the staff survey. Following our staff survey, we had a staff meeting to share the results. It was very interesting. Our K2 teachers, our K1 teachers and our 2-3 teachers thought our 4th and 5th grade teachers would do a fantastic job of multi-agent specialization. And the others were still a little iffy on where things are at. And that's, as you can see, where we pretty much stand right now. I did meet with teams individually. I met with the 4th and 5th grade teachers. I've met with the 2nd and 3rd grade teachers as well to have those conversations and talk to them about their comfort level. Just as my colleagues have said, to ensure that the results that we saw in the survey were where they were feeling and where things were at. And for 4th and 5th grade, and I've got a number of 4th and 5th grade teachers that are here in the room this evening, they definitely felt strongly about moving forward. My 2nd and 3rd grade teachers still have some questions, and they would like to have further conversations. And so I stand before you tonight saying we're not there with 2nd and 3rd grade, not to say that we may not get there in some form or fashion before the end of the year. But at this point, this evening, we're ready for a 4-5 roll forward with the multi-age literacy, social studies, and specialization in STEAM and math and in literacy and social studies. Not a whole lot to add in terms of where we're at. I can tell you that I've heard Karen mention it. I've heard Mary and Linda mention it as well. 4th and 5th grade, I think, they look forward to the opportunity to meet the needs of more learners in a different way if this proposal were to go through. They struggle right now to meet the needs of all learners within our given structure. You've heard that a number of times. Karen showed a slide a little bit earlier that showed 5 groups. I'm going to turn Jen, Dee Dee, how many? 6 and a couple of one-on-one situations. Six groups as well. So we have even a wider range of needs. You see that by the time kids get to 4th and 5th grade at the end of their elementary experience, the gap continues to widen. My 4th and 5th grade teachers see that and they know that and they realize the importance of trying to do something different. They know that specializing will help them get better at delivering instruction to all students. And then combining the like abilities for literacy and social studies will help them reach all students to improve their skills and make that move towards providing more individualized instruction for all students. So we met with parents a few weeks back. It was 2 weeks ago tonight. Actually, we had a small group of parents who came together. And there were a number of good questions, a number of questions asked in the room. And one of my teachers, Allison Gerling, couldn't be here tonight. I asked her if I could paraphrase. I couldn't remember the exact quote, but paraphrase. She was asked by a parent, how are you going to do this? How are you going to be able to have all the, be ready to go and have the, you know, the professional development you need? And Linda just spoke to it so eloquently. And Allison just basically said, you know, we're already doing these things. We're already trying to make this work. We're trying to make it work within our current structure of one grade level. going to two grade levels will allow us to be able to expand and look at more needs and be able to target more students and better align our instruction. And so that's kind of where we feel we're at. I know that you've had others say that as well. So I'm proud of the work that we've done so far on this initiative and look forward to having the opportunity to roll it out next year for the benefit of all my fourth and fifth grade students. And I look forward to having the continued conversations with second and third grade to see where we can get, if we can get to some parts of this or all parts of this in the near future.
Quick question. Does that mean there's no specialization in second and third grade?
Correct. At this time, there's no specialization. As of 8:15, at this time, there's no specialization for second and third grade at this time. So a layout of the building for us, currently our fourth and fifth grade classes are around the library. And so those would continue. We would see adding one additional class. And so we would look to try and put that classroom as close as possible in the layout of the building. I was looking to try and put that here. We haven't identified which rooms would be literacy, which rooms would be math, but we know that we would be able to have that work. We've also looked at identifying a STEAM lab, a literacy lab, and also a math lab within the building. And then the yellow that you see is our current kindergarten and first grade sections that would stay the same. And second and third grade, you can see as well. And so we have the blessing of having smaller class sizes at Churchill because of our wide range of needs. We have the curse of taking up every classroom and every space in the building and having very little flexible space to be able to make any moves or make any changes. And so every space is pretty much in use here with how we are doing things. And I would love to be able to, like I said, roll forward with this next year and see where we can go to start making some positive strides for all of our students, fourth and fifth grade.
Thank you.
I'm Kirk Samples, principal at Franklin School. And I'm here to talk to you tonight about our proposal for the Board of Education to consider for implementation at Franklin. As we began our conversation, we've many members involved with the think tank, but as we brought it back to our school and began talking with the rest of our teachers and the rest of our staff, I had a quote up on the board, and I'll read the quote to you. It's from a book called To Teach by an author named Ayers. And the quote says, "Good schools are geared to continuous improvement. No school, no teaching, no curriculum is ever perfect. Good schools are places where people are neither smug nor complacent. Good schools are always in the making." And I think that kind of summarizes how I feel about this process. I think that this process is a good one. I think that this community is to be commended on the level of turnout, the level of concern that we're showing this evening. It's the right conversation for a community such as ours to be having. It's about our students, about how we're learning in our schools every day, and so I think we're congratulating them on that. Franklin Schools had strong involvement in the think tank since work began about 18 months ago with 9 or 10 staff members and one parent participating on a regular basis. We've been involved in dozens of after-school and full-day summer meetings, read many articles and books, gone on several professional visits, attended and hosted multiple parent meetings, and in all invested probably hundreds of man hours of work in this process. I would just say that on the whole, we've had a great time learning together, and I'm grateful to have been a part of this professional conversation. It would be accurate to say that this group that has worked on this has become committed to the ideas and the principles behind this proposal, and understandably so. Put a lot of time into it and become very knowledgeable about it. Since presenting the main ideas of the think tank work to the rest of the staff a few months ago, we have had also several meetings, lots of great discussion, continued with our learning. We met with the whole staff, I met with individual teachers, I met with grade level teams, and we met with combined teams of the 2, 3, and the 4, 5. Admittedly, one of the challenges that we've had as a staff has been in trying to bridge the knowledge gap between those that have been closely involved with the work with those that have not. We used the staff survey tool as an opportunity to check our readiness as a staff a few weeks ago and found that there's still work to be done in terms of closing this information gap. The themes of our conversation over this time have indicated overall support for the ideas and principles of the think tank proposal, but that we have some work to do to plan for many of the details that come along with a change like this. As my colleague has said, we feel as though, and this comment came through when we were talking about this presentation with our think tank team, that we feel as though the work we've been doing for the last 5 years to move our classroom practice toward a workshop model for reading and writing and now with guided math, it really has positioned us to be ready for this next step. Our teachers assess the level of their learners on a continuous basis. They meet with them in small groups on a daily basis, small groups of children that are the same learning range, and they move them through just right instruction to the next level of their achievement. And really, that's the essence of what we're proposing for this change process. Most of our classroom teachers last summer attended a week-long problem-based learning workshop. And in a recent PTA meeting that we had, teachers shared excellent examples of the type of inquiry-based learning that we want to engage our students with to better prepare them to be creative and collaborative and college and career ready. Our work over our last several years with PBIS, beginning this year with our Franklin Families, which is an integrated learning opportunity that we've been working on, as well as our work this year to have students understand and learn our District 41 learner characteristics. Hopefully all these things have contributed to a school culture that is going to support the multi-age environment that we're talking about. So in summary, the great work that's already happening will provide a strong foundation and start for this process. And I would just close by saying I'm fortunate to work with this staff, not only the think tank staff, our administration board, but our teaching staff at Franklin School, whom I regard as being among the highest caliber of educators that I've known. And they care so much about the work that they do and the children that they work with that they're willing to invest this amount of time and effort in researching this process and then just in discussing it and having conversations and being very, very in tune with the conversation that's been going on. So I'm very proud of that fact and proud to be a part of that. So our facilities process, or current map, looks like this. These are our portables up here. That would kind of be our 4-5 literacy wing. And then we have grades 1 and 2. I'm sorry, grades kindergarten and first grade would remain in the current classrooms. The paint down here is the kind of 2-3 literacy classrooms, or second and third grade literacy classrooms, sorry. And then do we have the other portion of the second floor? There we go. On the second floor, which is really kind of the whole second floor will be our STEAM area of the building. And so we'll have second and third grade math and science, our 4-5 math and science over here, a nice area for a STEAM lab here in the middle of the upstairs of our school. And that's our current thinking on where our classrooms and so forth will be located for next year. Thank you.
This highlights a very general professional development plan, and you'll notice that identifying some things that we need to do in March. It really focuses, it includes things on multi-age, but then you'll see the side that's specific to teacher specialization in regards to literacy and then STEAM as well. The reason it does say grant, but you really can't see it on there, is that PDT, our professional development team, will also work with us in defining some of the specifics. You will note that in the summer, it is noted up here that it is optional time. We can't make our teachers come to those things. But a lot of what we've heard, and we feel it's important to distinguish.
Can you speak into the mic, please?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Can't hear you all.
Do you want me to go back over some of the PD stuff?
Okay. Shaking your head.
Again, here's the general professional development plan. It deals with both multi-age and then areas of teacher specialization. So you'll see things specific to literacy teachers on the left-hand side and STEAM teachers on the right-hand side. Things would begin in March.
and continue into the summer. What occurs in the summer will be optional. We can't require the teachers to be there, but we have heard that many people want the time to come together to work on things. So we would provide that time. It would not be new learning, just that availability. And then the learning that occurs would be on days when we would have everybody together. There are some opportunities for new learning that we met with someone from, one of our parents actually, who works at COD, and we're going to offer some trainings in regards to some of the strands at that higher level Common Core math. And we've talked about identifying a spring date and even a fall date for after school times. And that's just to help teachers feel more comfortable with some of that increased rigor of the Common Core as well. You'll notice in here as well that starting the summer of 2014 is that additional STEM training. We'll know what that new curriculum is. And so they need both PD on new curriculum materials and then from an instructional perspective in regards to the area of STEM. And Linda talked about even what her staff identified. And those will all be incorporated into that as well. Every year, we designate professional development dollars. I designate dollars, Lori has dollars that are designated, and we always work together in how we continue to fund it. And the same would apply to this, and we feel that we would continue to fund it with the dollars that we've designated over time as well. So, go ahead, Mike. In regards to evaluating the implementation, first of all, that we know that in the first couple months of the implementation, we'd be looking at things like student adjustment, how our kids are adjusting to it, how are our teachers and our parents adjusting, how are teachers managing their schedule, how's the math and science schedule working in regards to accessing the labs the buildings have designated, and how are they communicating across teams, the literacy teams and the STEAM teams. What's happening in the classroom is really what's happening today. They're gathering their baseline data on their children, and they're building a community of learners within their classroom. Only now they'll also build a community of learners within their team and in the building as well, as we've heard some of the buildings talk about what they do, friends and families, and their wolf packs that occur at Churchill. So similar things to that. Overall, though, we will be looking at the fidelity of the implementation and the impact and the satisfaction in regards to the various components. This framework might look familiar. It's what was used when Hadley New Horizons made their structural changes as well. And then, obviously, as we move forward from year to year, we would make adjustments according to the data that's gathered as we evaluate it. As far as next steps in that, we noted that the board took action on the new contract in that. And so the work of the think tank will soon transition to a group called Team 21, the successor committee. And Team 21 will be one of our teams for excellence. It's replacing what we currently have as LLT, the Learning Leadership Team. So Team 21 will make innovation for 21st century learning a part of our organizational structure moving forward. There is some basic information that I gave you within those folders around some of the next steps in these very specific categories, along with a few others. The simulated experience for our students at the end of this school year, meet and greet, someone else mentioned parent-teacher conferences. So we've got some beginning work around that, and this will be the work of Team 21 as it transitions starting in April. In addition, we do have, it was mentioned earlier, we have a community forum on Saturday, March 9th, and then each of the buildings will be hosting their own site-based meeting, and the building principals will share those dates and times with you. So that concludes kind of the formal part. We'll open up to questions. I know you may have questions of the principals as well. Mm-hmm. So those of you can just jump right in, or I can answer.
Time for board discussion?
Yes, I just want to, because we heard that you couldn't hear Karen and she was actually near a mic, so I would request that board members, when they ask a question, to project as much as we can. We have some quiet voices on the board, not mine. But please speak out. And Steve, also, if I mentioned this earlier to you, but if It's easier for you to text me your questions to my phone. Please do that, and then I can ask them for you if that's easier, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Board members.
I guess I'll start.
Speak up a little bit, John.
Sure. I just want to go back. I'm trying to take notes here on the process. So, for the principals, it sounds like what happened is you guys looked at the survey data, and I agree that the data can be a little conflicting. There were some things that made something seem positive and then something seemed negative. So you looked at that. You use that as your basis for going back to each of the grade levels. So I'm assuming you met either with your second grade team, your third grade team, your fourth grade team, and your fifth grade team. And based on that, you had a conversation on the survey. You tried to peel the onion further on the data. What did it mean? What were they looking for? And then you had a team discussion, and the teams came back and essentially gave the recommendations that we just heard. This came from the teachers. Is that the way the process worked? I mean, in addition to the other things, but that's the way the process worked for each of you? Or was there... That's the way it worked. Then it seems like the data would suggest that the Lincoln recommendation is very different than what the data would suggest based on emails we've gotten and conversations we've had. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a tough question, but I know you can answer. So, it sounds like you took two additional steps in your process, which I'm interested in the other principals took it to. The first step was to let the teachers meet without administration or principals in the room to have a discussion. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And the second one, I wasn't sure if did Dia go back after those discussions, or did Dia go back on the survey to try to understand whether the survey was administered?
Dia reps went prior to the teacher's meeting. So they went and met with each teacher shortly after the survey data was released. And we met as a team and talked about what the data, met at the school and we talked about the data, and pointed out the fact that we had some discrepancies. So then after that, then Dia went, and then after that, team met and talked.
Okay, so I'm assuming you had these meetings, you came back, you made these recommendations. I'm going to assume, you know, in a grade level of second grade or third grade, four teachers, five teachers, I'm going to assume it wasn't 100%, but I'm going to assume it was majority. In other words, it wasn't 2 and 2.
No, okay. For us, 2 and 3 was 100%. And they came, and after they met and they talked. So after, you know, initially when that survey was redone, there
were still people with questions, and so that's when they met and had professional conversations within their PLC, their grade level teams. And then the second and third grade teachers on their own decided they wanted to meet together and have conversations and talk about it. After that, they invited me in to a meeting, a lunchtime meeting with them. And at the end of the meeting, they're like, yeah, we're on board. We'd like to move forward with this.
Okay, so you're saying...
And with 100% of the teachers, they're present, and 100% of the teachers are ready to move forward with it.
That was for 2 and 3?
For 2 and 3.
Same with 4 and 5?
4 and 5. They were on board, didn't have to even need to go back and meet with me. They were feeling very strongly and ready to move forward.
Okay. So then there's sort of the other thing for me, which is Churchill. So, similar question. I'm assuming, did you have that extra step of not meeting without you? Or
they've been talking. We've been talking about this all year long. Okay. Actually, since last year, and there's been conversations that have probably happened. I couldn't tell you exactly what every conversation would be that teams have without me, but I'm feeling pretty comfortable that they've had conversations about this. And so when I went to the second and third grade team and asked the question in terms of, obviously the data says you're not ready to go full implementation, are there parts that you're ready to go with? And there were still a number of questions that those teams had. And so that's why I said it, as I said earlier, We're not there right now, but we continue to have the conversations. They had a lot of questions that they still felt like they wanted to have answered, and so we're still continuing down that road in that process. We were asked to take the survey data in a pretty quick turnaround, come back and have conversations so that we could prepare for this presentation to know where we're at. And so when Ann asked us to come forward, I said, I feel very comfortable with my fourth and fifth grade based upon the conversations that I've had moving forward. Second and third grade, we need a little bit more time to have further conversation. So, and I think my colleagues would echo that, other than Lincoln being to the point that they're at. I wish I was where Lincoln is, honestly, but we're not there yet. But we're working on seeing what we do to get there.
And would you say on the 4-5 level it was 100% or 75%?
There were some people still with questions at 4-5, but they said, you know what, we believe in the process and we believe in this team of people that we have around us, and we are already doing so many of these things that they felt like they could move forward and be successful with it next year.
Okay. Forest Glen, 100% of the 4-5, or?
They still have a few questions about it, but and that's only like one or two people, but they are committed to the process. They're excited about specialization. They're excited for the PLCs that they're going to be setting up around specialization and excited about the multi-age. So they're really ready to go. And 2-3 it really wants to try the specialization to kind of phase it in, specialization first year, multi-age second year.
And with our 4-5 group, not 100%, teachers with some questions about time to plan out details. We were had a lot of discussion about how will we, you know, there's a lot of, I guess you could say the devil's in the details, and people are concerned or have worries about that. And so I wouldn't say it was not 100% at 4th and 5th grade, but again, belief in the principals and what we're trying to do in terms of meeting the needs of children, I think, was a concept that was understood and agreed upon by everybody.
So each of you feel, at least at the 4-5, that there was strong enough support to move forward?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. John, can I do a follow-up?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. I just wrote this down, and Kirk, you actually answered a little bit of it, but you know, all of you have said that there are questions, and that's a theme in terms of the board receiving lots of email and comment or calls and, you know, wanting to make sure that we can characterize those or at least understand them. So can you characterize what some of those questions are? When you say they still have questions, I made the assumption, and then you said it's the details, which we know come once a decision is made, to the extent that this is what we're moving forward with now, let's start to be concrete. What are the other questions?
There's a lot of those next step questions there, and then just, you know, work that out as a team and work it out with you know, how our school community works to make sure that we're staying with our school traditions, our school culture. Mm-hmm. And they're excited to work as a PLC and to have discussion around those next step themes, along with how they're going to kind of, you know, put their work and get going in their curriculum work. They're very excited about that.
Logistical questions, just like a lot of the community have had in terms of what certain things are going to look like and how that's going to roll forward. For me, in my second and third grade, we have a small second grade moving into a large third grade next year, and that's going to be a shift of teachers. And from a standpoint of we haven't worked any of those pieces out yet, and so I know I'm going to be working with a new team potentially next year. We might have to have some third grade teachers either move up or move down, and that hasn't been worked out. And well, would that person want literacy or math, or how does that go? And so those pieces still have to be worked out, and we're just in the beginning stages of that process. Mm-hmm. And so some of those things of just trying to work through what that would be and how it would look, and mm-hmm. getting over the traditional feel of my classroom, I think in some cases has been another thing where it's just my community of learners and this is my group and this is what I've known, and how do I, you know, even though I've been doing some of the shifting and some of the other things and moving kids around, you know, letting go of that, which is a sentiment we've heard from people as well, but we have to. We have to do some things to move forward. So.
Can I ask a question? Oh, I'm sorry, Kirk. Go ahead. Apologies.
Just to echo, a lot of logistical questions, things that really, it's kind of the chicken and the egg proposal here, that until we know that we're moving forward, it's hard to invest a great deal of time in planning and trying to figure out all of the little details, such as, you know, our fourth and fifth grade students will be moving from literacy, which is in the portables, to the upstairs of the building halfway through the day. So do we bring their backpacks and their coats with them? Or what do we do with those? What will we do with orchestra instruments? So a lot of things that I'm very confident we can work out solutions to, and that it'll, and as soon as we know what the outcome here is, that we would be able to answer those questions. But a lot of those things that impact the day-to-day work of teachers are I think, what people have questions about.
Thank you.
Chair, can I just want to ask a general question, because I'm trying to... He's a visual learner, and talking about the phase one with the math. So, and I see Mr. Wittenberg and Mrs. Thomas from Ben Franklin, who one's a fourth grade teacher, one's a fifth grade teacher. So, I'm just going to use them as my example. But Mr. Wittenberg would have a group, hypothetically, Mr. Wittenberg would have a group of multi-age fourth, fifth grade students for literacy, and so would Mrs. Thomas, and then they would go back to Mr. Wittenberg only teaching math to fourth graders and Mrs. Thomas being just the fifth grade math teacher?
If Mr. Wittenberg were a literacy teacher.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Mr. Wittenberg. You're most likely with the math group.
But he would have two groups of four or five students and teach literacy all day.
Okay, so let me ask it that way. So let's say Mrs. Thomas, who probably also would be a math science teacher, but hypothetically, Mrs. Thomas, if you were a literacy teacher, you would teach two groups, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, of just literacy, multi-age, where Mr. Wittenberg, per se, would just be teaching two groups of students for fourth grade math and science.
Correct. And he would have them. He would have two separate groups.
Yeah.
One in the morning, and one in the afternoon.
So technically speaking, Mr. Wittenberg's classes would be content-specific fourth grade.
Correct.
Only.
Well, it's accelerated math.
And Mrs. Thomas would be a multi-age literacy social studies teacher.
Right. We had some conversation around would we just assume we would keep that combine two multi-age fourth graders out of two different classes and send them on to math in the afternoon, and we said we wouldn't want to do that. We'd want to go through a placement process to create heterogeneous groups in math as well, kind of still narrow that band, but we would try to keep kids together so that they would still travel together. We couldn't guarantee that all of the kids from Mrs. Thomas's literacy class or fifth graders would go on to the same math class in the afternoon, but we would do our best to keep them, as many kids together as we could.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does. No, I just, like I said, I think from a as a parent, from a logistical perspective, it helps us to think of it from a teacher. You know, like who is, and I use the two teachers who I know in the room to visualize that, because I think, once again, we're still, I understand the graph that you showed with the bands for literacy that helped me to visualize what you meant by band. So I understand where the multi-age comes in with that. And then I guess the question is, so then we would potentially be doing something similar using our MAP scores to determine where our MAP science placement for these students would be. And then they would be placed accordingly. So let's say Mr. Wittenberg and Ms. Filmer, who's a fourth grade teacher, Ben Franklin, would get our MAP science students, and they would be splitting that that way as well. Okay. It got it. Thank you.
Sam, Dan?
I think this is the first time that we're seeing these cut scores.
Visual. Are you talking about the new
iPad?
Mm-hmm.
I And so I guess the drop is a lot worse than I was anticipating. So I think it kind of adds to what we're looking forward to and need to address going forward. And so one of my questions is, you know, I want to understand the schools that are not doing all of the recommendations, you know, are those not going to be up to the same speed as the schools that are doing? Just a little worried there. Just want to throw that out.
Do you want to respond?
Yeah, sure.
Can you guys mute the mic?
The question that was asked by Mr. Smith was, will the schools who are not going to do multi-age at A grade level, which would only be 2-3, but doing the teacher specialization, given the change in the cut scores that we've seen on the ISAT, which was one of the first slides in the presentation earlier, will students be at a disadvantage in those schools for not having that combination? And, you know, I'll let the principals add to that. I'll go ahead and take a first crack at that. I think one key that will be important would be the specialization, because that will help to deepen the knowledge and the attention, particularly in the area of math, since we'll be accelerating. The downside of what you lose in not doing the multi-age is the flexibility of grouping to your sample size, so that you have fewer guided instructional groups. And so teachers still have the same obligation to meet the needs, and they'll struggle in the ways that the principals outlined previously in terms of making the schedule work with such diversity of need among their students. And perhaps the principals can add to that as, by way of an answer.
I think that the teachers who are specializing will have deeper content knowledge in math, the area of math. I also think that changing the structure of the day for them will give them more time to work with their guided groups within the structure of the day. So while we're not going to be able to necessarily cut down on the number of guided groups altogether, we can maybe streamline it a little bit. I believe that there is an advantage to that specialization piece. We just aren't going to have as many groups to cut down on, to get them down to maybe 3 or 4 groups. We're still going to have probably 4 to 6 groups in every grade level classroom for math. But they will have increased time to meet the needs based on the structure of the day.
I would agree with Mary in terms of where we're at. I would like to see the specialization piece would definitely help. Otherwise, we're close to doing what we're doing now in terms of where we're at. And so, and the whole point of this was to look at trying to do something different to meet those changing needs. And so, yes, it would be more difficult to do it that way. So, which is why we're continuing to have the conversations.
Kirk, did you have a comment, Kirk?
Well, I'm just going to say that what we know about teaching in reading math is that when you can provide instructionally leveled material and activities that are leveled in a zone that suits the learners that you're working with, that's when they're going to show the most growth. This kind of structure is one that we believe will give us more opportunity to meet students in those groups that have a zone of learning where the teacher can provide that instruction. So that's why we think that it's a good plan or an improved plan. Mm-hmm.
John, real quick, Sam, did you have a question before we do a second round of questions?
Okay. Karen, I'm looking at this. And you talk about the overlap between the grades. Wouldn't there also be overlap between grade 3 and 4? And also between grades 1 and 2 and 2 and 3 and 5 and 6?
There's going to be overlap in all grade levels. It just depends on how wide that range might be. That's the difference, too, between Fountas and Pinnell data, because of the RIT scores. There's obviously far more
a much larger range, found just something out. There's only so many letters in the alphabet that the correlate to the reading models.
Could we do a better job at the beginning of the school year in, I don't want to say placing our kids, but formulating the classrooms to make these groupings closer, better? Is that an alternative to doing the multi-age?
Well, I think the buildings already try to do a good job with student placement, but they look at the child, the whole child. They're not looking at them as a literacy learner and a math learner. So, again, you may have what might be a strength for you in math, you may not be strong in literacy. So you're not going to get as much of that balance. The other thing I would caution us is that when you take just a strict grade level, and when you're looking at, if we just look at the orange or orange or red lines here, these are all of our fifth graders. They could be fourth graders, they could be third graders. But currently you can take all of those kids and put them into four buckets, maybe five buckets if you have four sections or five sections. So you can still, they still try to balance high, average, and low. But it's difficult to control for those extremes and putting like learners with them. And I don't know if the principals kind of want to add to that. But you're going to currently do what you're doing now, but you can't control for just what their math skills are like and just what their literacy skills are like.
So if we have a student, which may or may not ever happen, but if we have, say, a third grader who was in the former gifted math program, who was doing fifth, sixth grade math, if that's even a possibility.
They're going to keep doing that.
So the gifted program will stay in effect?
The kids who are currently in the program will continue on with the accelerated math that they're doing. And remember, it's a little different. Our current third graders in the accelerated program do fourth grade everyday math. So next year, all of our third graders are going to get that accelerated fourth grade math curriculum. What will be new is the opportunity for some of our kids who may be able to have double acceleration. We currently don't offer that to our third graders. It's only 1 year. Those students would get fifth grade everyday math as third graders. They would have to be with fourth graders. We're not going to have enough kids to provide for a full section of third graders receiving fifth grade math. Otherwise, it would totally distort our other class sizes in that. The kids who are currently in fourth grade accelerated math use sixth grade connected math. So it's a different program, and then they go on to fifth grade, and they're using seventh grade connected math. So those kids who are currently in third grade who are going to move to fourth grade in that program will continue receiving sixth grade instruction in connected math as fourth graders, and the fifth graders will get the seventh grade connected math. Now, those curriculum materials are just being released for a new Common Core version, and our accelerated curriculum teachers, there's a couple of them here tonight, they're looking at that new revised version as well as meeting with Hadley to see what they're looking at as far as accelerated, or not accelerated, just math materials that are aligned to the Common Core for Hadley. So to go back to your original question, so the accelerated math would continue. It'll look different for our third graders, but at the end of third grade, we'd look at our data, just as we look at student data at the end of every year to see which kids would go on to, as fourth graders, fifth grade everyday math, or which kids would join that accelerated group that's using sixth grade connected math. It's confusing as it is without all of this, but I could probably do a simplified like visual for you, just to kind of show you the different routes that kids could take. But the accelerated math curriculum is not going away.
We talked about at the beginning, the pilot versus the partial implementation, and either Ann or Karen could speak on why did we land on partial implementation versus the pilot, because I know that in the last meetings that I went to, we were kind of going toward the pilot model versus whatever this partial implementation model is. So what was the reasoning behind that?
Well, I'll just speak to the language piece first, so that we wanted to be able to speak with consistent language. The language we've used in pilots in the past have not perhaps coincided with some of the definitions that people have shared with us in emails recently. So when we've looked at pilots in the past, they have really been partial implementations. Everyday Math was a partial implementation we called a pilot. When we did standards-based report card, we invited teachers to participate in a pilot, but it was a partial implementation. We knew the data we would gather from those teachers participating would help guide us in the full implementation, but we were not doing it as a study to see whether or not we would even continue. Where we've had multiple options within a curriculum, we called it a field test. And that has been more of, well, we'll try this out and we'll see which of those options we like best. And so I think for clarity purposes, Sam, we've just said what we do by definition that we've called pilot in the past has not really been about will we decide to do this or not. It's really been about partial implementation.
So when we went with the partial implementation, was there any discussion about doing a partial implementation in one school only versus what we've come up with tonight with different iterations in each school, so we could maybe have some meaningful data that comes from the partial implementation?
We feel we'll still have reliable data from if each of our buildings is doing 4-5. What Think Tank and Karen may want to talk more about that was that buildings should decide for themselves what they are ready to do, rather than dictate to the buildings what they are ready to do. And so that's been really what you've heard from the principals is talking about each different building's readiness. What we would see is as being, there are two things that I think if we are able to go forward, we'll see. One is a full implementation of the original proposal, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then we see across the system 4, 5 at every grade level. The variations at second and third grade, I think are certainly up for board discussion or questions about that, but they tend to go towards specialization, you know, only and not the multi-age. So that's just another aspect of implementation that we'll be able to see. We're not looking, if you're wondering about, is it a scientific study, we're really looking at a programmatic structural implementation, and that is going to be evaluated in the same way that we would look at the structural implementation we did here at Hadley. You're talking about schedules and structures. And so the way we will assess that over the course of the year is, as I think the principals talked about, how is it going? You know, how is it going in terms of fidelity, impact, and satisfaction? That's why we didn't, the think tank, I think, thought each building really has to make this decision and bring it back to the board.
My concern with that, the partial implementation then, I guess, would be that you have some kids in certain schools that are receiving a certain type of instruction, and other kids in other schools are not receiving that instruction. And then when they get to the level that, the 4 or 5 level, when they all are getting the same instruction, then you're going to have, you would think, you're going to have some problems with the kids who didn't have that instruction in the 2-3 level.
They'll
be behind.
But from an instructional perspective, all kids will get the same thing, no matter if they're doing the multi-age or not. The modules will be implemented. From an instructional perspective, but it's the structure that we're talking about that gives us what we believe the greater ability to reach those needs. At least from, they're all going to get that increased accelerated math. That's not going to go, that wouldn't be any different. And the same thing from, they'll be exposed to those modules and that. We believe, though, by teacher specialization and the multi-age and how you create those classrooms, that we can achieve better results with that. And I'll kind of go back to what Ann mentioned a little bit earlier in regards to kind of a pilot. When we piloted the use of Pinnacle, it was the online tool for the standards-based report card. We did that by invitation. We had 100 teachers who wanted to participate in that. We had teachers from every single school. We had one building, it was Franklin, where every teacher piloted the use of that. And so a little bit of it feels like semantics, pilot versus partial implementation. It really was year one of using Pinnacle, and they became our teacher leaders. They gave us some feedback, and then it helped guide how we rolled out the professional development then the following year. So I would say that's how we've used, you know, and it does feel a little bit like semantics, partial implementation or pilot.
I want to make sure, Sam, that your question is answered to satisfaction, because I heard some murmuring and sounds like people want some clarification on that. So what Sam is asking is, will there at Churchill, without second and third grade being on board for any aspect of this, will that be detrimental to those children in this upcoming year based on the fact that there's no rollout of content specialization or multi-age?
His question was about instruction.
Instruction. So I'm saying
it will definitely
the
be more difficult for the teachers to deliver instruction under that system, yes.
Mm-hmm. But the instruction itself is what?
They're going to get the Common Core curriculum we're delivering. It's not different whether you're doing the implementation or not. It's just a matter of how it's being delivered. So, I mean, if I'm specializing, I'm able to get down deep and better with that and able to really fine-tune my craft there. If I'm staying on my own, I'm doing the new Common Core math pieces. I'm doing the literacy pieces for my group of kids the whole day, very similar to the educational system that we all grew up in. One teacher, one classroom, doing it all. This gives us the opportunity to be able to diversify and meet for teachers to get better at one particular area and meet more students. But it's not a different curriculum that those students at Churchill would be getting, but it would be more of a challenge to be able to meet all the needs, most definitely. Does that help?
It helps a little, yeah. It still seems that if the kids are getting the same instruction without the specialization, then it begs the question, the grouping, then why are we doing the grouping if they're going to get the same education and the same attention by the time they get to fourth, fifth, or sixth grade?
I'm going to try to answer that. And it's so abstract when you look at numbers like this. If we were just look at that red group up there, and that was our fifth grade at Lincoln School, for example, and we have our range is huge of our learners. We've got kids that we know we can accelerate more than what we have been, and we've got kids that we know we're having a hard time reaching. So in some of our classes, we have as many as 7 reading groups. And we have the structure of the day allows time for literacy, I mean, for reading, for writing, and for math. And a good example is maybe our math groups. We've got an hour for math. We've got kids that are all over the board, and we try to group them as much as we can and switch kids around in classrooms to meet their needs. But if there's only 4 teachers, you can only switch them and group them in so many different ways. You're still going to have a large range of kids in your class, and it's still going to have a limited amount of time you're going to be able to meet with each of those kids. You know, maybe there's a group that's just learning how to add, and there's other groups that are working on fractions. And in order to really meet their needs and meet the kids where they're at, I've got to be able to meet with each of those groups. And if I have 7 or 8 different kids at different levels in my classroom, and I have an hour of math to do that in, the likelihood of being able to meet every child's needs the way we want to is greatly decreased. And so our hope is that by increasing the number of teachers teaching that, or grouping the kids in such a way, and for literacy, for example, grouping them in such a way that we now have 9 teachers or 8 teachers opposed to the 4, that we're going to be able to make groups and make it more more tailored to each child's individual needs. And that's what our hope is, and that's how we feel we're going to be able to impact kids.
And I don't know if part of your question is asking if you believe that there will be a harmful effect on children moving from a single grade traditional classroom to a multi-age setting when other children in the district have been doing multi-age for longer. I don't believe that there will be. I think that, I mean, the reason we're proposing this is because we believe it'll be the optimal situation. But teachers in those multi-age classrooms will meet those kids, you know, where they are when they come in, and move them as far as they can during the school year. So,
I don't think harmful. I just think maybe negative. In that, you know, if we're going to go deeper with the specialization and the grouping for the kids in certain schools, but not do that in other schools, then at some point when they all meet, it's going to be a wider gap. So, I mean, I don't want to belabor the point, but that's what.
So, like when they all meet at Hadley, the students. So, as an example, the students who are at Churchill and they may not have specialization, and the students at the other three schools will have had at least specialization as it looks right now.
Right.
Will the students at Churchill be at a disadvantage?
Right. And I don't know if we can answer the question mm-hmm. because I don't know if the program is going to work. If it works and it's very successful, then we've broadened the gap even more mm-hmm. from the kids who did it versus the kids who didn't. And so I think that's sort of a reason to pilot it somewhere.
I guess, can I try to, I try and understand a little bit. I mean, if we piloted in one school, then you're saying concept applies, right?
In other
words, one school gets something and the other three don't. So a pilot, either way, in my mind, assuming that what you're doing is good, one school benefits versus the other doesn't. Doesn't mean you shouldn't pilot, but I think that problem would still exist. If you just piloted one school, then you've got three other schools that go to Hadley that either do or don't benefit, or maybe they benefit because they didn't go through this, right? So it could work either way. So I do think the concept still exists that one school will get something versus another school not getting something. I don't see how that's put away by a pilot. What a pilot does, though, is it helps you with learnings, so that you can apply it better to the other group if you're going to do it. And then the other thing it does is, it's not a good thing you didn't spread it all the way through. And to me, that's really the benefit of the pilot. But the way I understand the recommendation, partial implementation, pilot, full implementation, whatever the word is, so this year is, if you will, the partial implementation / pilot / social experiment, whatever you want to call it. Next year, everybody is in the full recommendation the way I'm seeing this. So we have 1 year of this problem, not multiple years of this problem, the way it currently is recommended. Now, we as a board can have that discussion and decide if we want to change that. But the way it is written now, my understanding of it is it's full implementation after 1 year of essentially implementing specialization and multi-age at 4-5. That's the way I'm interpreting it, unless you guys are interpreting it differently, outside of Lincoln, which is going further with 2-3, and Churchill, which is saying we're not ready for that yet, but we're still having some discussions.
I interpret it the same way. The issue I may have next year is, what if the staffs are of the same opinion next year that they are this year? So, for example, Churchill still, the 2-3 still does not want to proceed for whatever reason. Then, you know, the gap widens. And what if Lincoln tried it, doesn't want to do it? What happens then? Is it just starting too bad it's going to happen?
I think that's the whole point of... That's the learnings you get, right? And then we reevaluate and decide if it makes sense to move forward, or I mean, we may not even adopt this recommendation, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I think the point is, whatever we decide to do, we need to have a process where we're evaluating. You know, we probably need a quarterly or report on how it's going and lessons learned, and then inform us so that if we don't feel it's worth pursuing the following year, we should act as a board to do that as well. I guess I have a, I don't know, I'm going to be rude, I don't hear very well either, so. I'm
going to make sure my question's out. Hi, Karen. Hey. So in the math, what we're doing is we're accelerating everybody by a year. So math for me is one of those subjects where if you stumble early, it may be hard to catch up, or you may feel, you know, math isn't the right for me thing and walk away from it and be discouraged. So, and you know, I want to raise the bar. So accelerating math by a year is great. What are we going to do about the kids that are currently struggling with math, that all of a sudden we're going to jump them and make sure that we take care of them so that we don't put them in a situation of, oh my God, I hate math, I'm not going to stay in math, and move on. So I just want to understand how we're going to deal with those kids, because we do have some of those kids.
We have some kids that will have small gaps or just in certain strands, and then we know we have kids who are going to have some significant catching up to do. What we will do is identify where we know those gaps will exist as we transition. If you recall, everyday math spirals, so things are introduced and things come back around. So we'll identify what they are. We'll create those units for teachers to do pre-teaching to kind of bridge some of that gap, those gaps that will exist. But we'll also have those interventions and that time that we know that kids can have access to be able to fill in those gaps. You know, the Common Core is coming, and, you know, we even at Math Committee have debated, and we've worried about, we can't write or implement a curriculum that's geared towards our struggling learners. We know we've got to ratchet it up, and it's we feel like next year is the year to kind of take that leap, give teachers the freedom to kind of flex that block time, to spend more time in math. It's the old science curriculum for one more year. We'd love to see something more, but we know we're not ready. And those science standards will just be out in May, so we've got to take the time to look at those deeply, create that curriculum. So I've given teachers that opportunity to flex that time. Hopefully they can spend the additional time they need through guided groups and that to further fill in those gaps, give them what they need, close the overall achievement gap, and be sure that they've scaffolded their instruction and kind of plugged some of those holes. The Common Core talks about going deeper, and they have narrowed the different strands. So as we look at that, we'll know which are those essentials that we need to hit in those areas and what are the ones we can kind of give up. And that's what we kind of mean by compacting, hitting those essentials that are connected to the core. Does that help?
It does.
Go ahead, James.
Can I ask another question?
Drew has a question.
Oh,
sorry.
No, go ahead, John. Go ahead. I'll wait.
You're next.
I just love microphones. Does it help to use the mic or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Question for me. I would have thought specialization, I hate to use this term, was a no-brainer, just because the survey, I think it was 79%, thought it made sense. It seems that's the way the industry's going in terms of teachers getting their degrees. And we do have some schools that are saying they're not ready for specialization. I guess I'm asking as a board here, is that something that we should be considering to suggest to the schools that specialization is something that we want to implement next year? Or is the process of the school saying we're not going to do that the right approach? I'm trying to understand what we're sacrificing by doing that, because to me that was the one thing in the data that seemed fairly clear and where the industry was going. So I'm trying to understand what the implication is by having some schools not specialize.
I think Scott highlighted it. It is really from a kind of teacher capacity. And we know there are similarities with the math curriculum. We see it as an easier transition, more seamless, because they're already familiar with the layout of everyday math, the language of everyday math, those kinds of things. It'll still be ratcheted up a year. We had intended, and we now have many first grade teachers asking for the modules in literacy. We roll them out in third through fifth. We would have been rolling them out in second grade. So our concern would be that it will feel like a lot of new experiences for teachers who don't specialize. We hear from teachers, you know, they've experienced a lot of change over the past few years, and we had, you know, we had a new literacy curriculum, a new math curriculum, and then the Common Core came, and it was a game changer for us. We had to relook at those areas sooner. Our teachers have been working really hard. They'll continue to work hard.
So I would have thought the transition with all the Common Core, if I'm a teacher, to transition my five or six subjects to the Common Core versus my specialization would be a harder challenge because of the rigor built into the Common Core. So should I assume that the teachers that decide not to specialize will have more of a burden in terms of getting their curriculum up to speed with the Common Core because they're doing all the curriculum?
Well, and I don't want to speak on behalf of those teachers or put words in their mouths.
Any teacher want to answer that?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, steal a microphone. My name is John Bauer. I teach fourth grade at Lincoln.
Again, just want to give you just a little bit of a voice from a teacher. I have a 21st century classroom. This year is my first year of adapting that. And the 21st century learning is not just technology, which I think, you know, again, having been through that for a year and answering a lot of parent questions, a lot of times they think, oh, it's 21st century. It's, you know, it's the Jetsons and you got iPads and so on. Actually, it's a little bit of old school. It's inquiry-based. It's hands-on learning. It's allowing the students more time to do and kind of figure things out. And also, you know, we have acronyms in teaching all the time. It's PBL, so it's project-based learning. So I'm just going to give you my perspective. I feel I've got one foot in the old school, you know, kind of the keeping up with the volume of core standards and assessing everything accurately, keeping up with the data, the entry, all of that, differentiating all of my instruction in all of the areas for my group and then also for my teammates, because we're already doing guided math and TLT and guided reading. So the short answer is, yes, it is absolutely mind-boggling more difficult to try to do that without having that kind of split between a team of literacy and a team of STEAM teachers. And again, that's just my opinion.
Thank you,
John. I'm just going to sit down. I'll stand. Can everybody hear me?
No,
I wanted to do something different from John, so, but that's okay. I have three questions, and I don't know if you want me to give them one at a time or you want to go one by one. My first question is something that you said, Karen, and I just need to understand. I need a clarifying question relative to what you were calling a like learner. And does that mean the people in the circles on the different continuums, that's what you're talking about? Just could you just expand on that a little for me just so I can understand it?
Like learners really mean that they have someone in the room who's a similar learner to them, so that when they do whether small group or partner activities, they have someone who is similar to them. So this does represent like learners. I mean, obviously you still have a little bit of a range, but if you have this child in a classroom right here and nobody else kind of in this zone, it's not, they don't have any like learners with them. They become, a couple of teachers from Churchill mentioned they have, what do you call them, groups of one? One-on-one, where they need to pull them individually because they have no one else who's a like learner to pull a small group. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Second question. My second question really goes to the concept that of implementation as opposed to the pilot. And I know that there's this concept that's been floated out there that each implementation is going to happen when different buildings are ready. I guess my concern, and I'd like more Karen to address that, is that how are you going to manage four different buildings at different levels in terms of implementation? How it seems that the one thing that the district has done really, really well is to try and be consistent in terms of what's being done. So my question on that is, how are we going to manage that process?
Turn your phones off.
I would say it's going to be, it's a shared management process. Even if you look at that PD plan, we talked a little bit about that it's really, it can apply to anybody who is specializing. There are aspects of multi-age, but we felt that would be professional development opportunities that would benefit all of our teachers. So they would all participate in that. Now, K-1, teachers who aren't specializing, they would need to have full days of literacy and full days of math, kind of currently what we're doing. But I believe we've got a strong building administrators at each of our schools. I think their presence here, Jeff is here as an assistant principal, is they're committed to this. I heard passion in their voices as they were talking about that. What? It's 1 year that we would be different, but I guess I don't foresee, you know, it's going to be difficult to kind of keep track of where they're at. We try to give them the support they need now, and even though we try to be alike, each of our buildings still have unique needs. And it was something I thought of too when we were talking a little bit about you know, to not do it at all schools. And one of the things we talked about at Think Tank, and even the Think Tank Parent Advisory, there was concern expressed that if we said it can only be one school, we would hear, well, that worked at Franklin School because of those kinds of kids, the learners they have at Franklin, but it wouldn't work at my school because my kids are more diverse. Again, that was just part of the conversation that we have, because each of our schools does have a unique set of learners, and we need to support them differently. And even now, from a professional development perspective, we try to gather what is it that each of the buildings need, and we try to address those needs globally, and then what needs to be tailored and more individualized. Is that your second or third question?
One more. My third question is really directed more to Ann than anything. In terms of the vote on this,
on the 11th.
What's that?
On the 11th.
The vote on the 11th. As I see it, there are basically three very distinct pieces. There's the multi-age up to three, multi-age four or five, and then the specialization. It's really three pieces. Is it possible that the vote be on each piece, or does it have to be on the whole?
Well,
I think our expectation was that the presentation from each of the buildings, the vote would be on the whole of those presentations. Do you approve us moving forward with the recommendations that you've received from each of the buildings, as opposed to piecemealing the concepts of the plan? Because as you've seen, each building has asked to do 4 or 5 in all of the whole configuration. And then specialization varies at 2-3, and multi-age varies at 2-3. So because each building is slightly different, we would ask you to accept their recommendation.
I have one question that pulls together a little bit of this last dialogue, and then if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and move forward with public participation. One of the questions I had for Dan to ask was about how will we ensure that all teachers will be ready to hit the ground running in August, and I've heard that answered. The piece that I have as a question in addition to that is this description of a plan for measuring the effectiveness of the partial implementation in that first 30 to 60 days when we're, you know, fulfill those at least initial professional developments. We're still continuing that. But can you give me a sense of what you've talked about either with your grade levels, with your buildings, and or as for our 4 building leaders with regard to that plan?
Or Karen, whomever.
Mm-hmm. You know, the first 30 days of school is really a time for teachers to build their classroom communities. It's a time for levels, like 4-5 level or 2-3, to develop a sense of team. Mm-hmm. It's a time for expectations to be set, all those kinds of things that are critical for future success in the classroom. So our first 30 days is really about supporting teachers in being able to do that. It's taking a look at how kids have adjusted or are adjusting, and how teachers are, what teachers actually need during that period of time. It's time when we begin all of our assessments. You know, the MAP test campaign is just try to get an idea of where kids are, making sure that they're grouped, creating groups that work. The second 30 days is now a time really to fine tune all those kinds of things that we've had, getting some more feedback from teachers, and that's something that's going to be going on, an ongoing type of conversation. Working with both the PLCs for STEAM and the PLCs for literacy, as well as looking at, you know, and I think another one thing we got to stress too is that they also come together and talk about kids in general, and getting the input and the feedback from both specialized teachers as to how things are working in their classrooms.
I think it'll be, as well as talking to the professionals that are implementing, it'll be important to also talk with our kids, find out what their perceptions of the change are, how they think things are going, and talk with our parents. And so whether we do some survey work or just hold some meetings to try and gather that input during those two first months will be an important part of the evaluation process.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know, I'm kind of loud, so maybe I don't even like.
I have a microphone.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
I want to ask a question that came up around multi-age. So for me, multi-age implies looping. Now, I don't know if that's part of the recommendation or concept, but it seems that multi-age implies looping, and I'm interested from the teacher's perspective. It seems to me, at least what I understand the benefits of looping are, is that you're familiar with your student for a longer period of time. When they come in the next year, you know them, so it's faster to ramp up, and there seems to be, again, based on the research that I read, less anxiety when you go to school the next year because you know your teacher, and you're not going through that whole drill of when does the envelope arrive on who your teacher is. So any perspective from teachers, are those real benefits? Are they important benefits? Are they social-emotional benefits, or not at all?
First of all, we did say the potential for a 2-year relationship.
That was a concern that had been expressed by some parents, too, that what if it wasn't a good fit? Would they have to stay together? And we said no, that we would look at that like we said, as we do now. But did anybody else want to respond? Teachers. Do you ask for teachers? Hi, I'm Joan Doyle, and I teach second grade over at Ben Franklin School. And I just want to tell you my experience that I had. I taught first grade, and then I went back to second grade. So what we did there is we had the parents actually decide whether they wanted to stay with me or go to another classroom. Well, out of 23 kids, I had 22 kids come back with me to second grade. So I had those children for 2 full years, and I can tell you it was beneficial because they did know the right away. They knew, you know, what we did, and we started, I always say we started the ground running kind of thing, you know, like a Nike commercial. But I found that I knew those children inside and out. I have to tell you, I miss them tremendously, though, when I had to leave them after the 2 years. It was hard for me. So it was beneficial. It was. For them.
Thank you.
Yeah,
did you still have a question?
Yeah,
Gary, one more.
I do, Sarah.
One more?
Okay.
And Dan has one more.
I had just a couple questions. A little bit of a clarification. I think Kirk and Mary, you guys talked about specialization due to staffing. Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I also think, and Kirk, you're at Franklin, you have 2 teachers at third grade that don't want to specialize. Or am I just misreading?
No, misreading.
Okay. I just wasn't sure what you meant by the staffing patterns.
It's just a question of whether or not, if we have the traditional class size targets that are currently the board's targets that we try to staff to each year, we currently have a small second grade class that will be rolling up into third grade, and the target numbers change from second to third grade. And so if we operated with the old class size targets, our third grade staffing would go from 4 sections of third grade down to 3 sections of third grade. And that becomes problematic when you're talking about specialization, because you kind of need the even 2 and 2 in order to switch. But we're talking about it and looking at different ways that might be possible. So that's still a question for us.
And at Forest Glen, we currently have 3 sections of first grade that are outside the class size targets, but not enough to create a 4th section at this current time. And so, you know, we are looking at the same kind of pattern that Franklin is with their third grade with 3 sections. How do you specialize with 3 sections? So we're just trying to figure out, you know, how do you do that mathematically? How do you do that so each teacher can specialize? And, you know, we're open to suggestions for how to do that, because my second grade team is very interested in specialization. We're just struggling around the concept of 3.
Sam has a question.
All right, I'll ask the quick question first. I've heard this comment, and I think I know the answer, but one of the questions was around social studies. I believe it was, like, for 4th and 5th grade, you would split up the units so that in a 2-year period you wouldn't repeat the unit. So the question was, when you're getting started next year, how do you do that so those 4th graders aren't repeating a 4th grade unit?
We've referred to them as modules, and some of our literacy specialists are here. So within the 4th and 5th grade age band or grade band, there would be 4 history modules and 4 more geography modules. So next year we would start with the 4 history modules, which none of those kids will have had, and then the second year you'd go to the 4 geography modules.
So over the course of 2 years, kids would experience 8 different modules, and they would all be different but connected to the social studies content.
Right, but I guess, so like I have a fourth grader, so the question is when he goes to the fifth grade, you know, I've heard, what is he, is my kid missing something? What are they missing?
Nothing. They'll be the history modules, and they will not have already had them.
So like, so he's already had the geography modules?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a lot of community in the primary grade, so Latin second and third grade, so we're going to be extending them anyway. Sam?
Yeah. Instead of walking around, let me go back a few steps. So the initial premise that was given to the schools to do the implementation was what Lincoln has adopted. Is that a fair statement? Sorry, with the exception of level math?
The level math concept is new, and that's coming out of kind of the rigor of the Common Core as we look further at it.
So that's kind of a new premise. But I think in the board report, there was a statement. Let me see if I can find it in here, too. But, you know, Think Tank went back and had a lot of conversation and looked at the feedback. And we've had the opportunity, you know, we summarized the research around multi-age. That's in your packet. It's on the website. We summarized the research around 21st century learning in that. We've talked to some multi-age districts, basically. I know Kirk was fortunate to be able to take a small group on Friday. We will be taking additional groups out to visit in that. But as we looked at it, and then when we saw the data, I think Think Tank really recommitted to the premises of what we've been suggesting around those proposals. And feel strongly about it. And that's why you see in that phase two is wanting to go that multi-age the following year. But the big difference between what you had heard originally would have been along the lines of math.
And that's coming from the committee. I mean, what's the math committee side?
Okay. So we went with the phase one implementation. So the premise, I guess, was this paragraph about concerns about teacher readiness, professional development, student needs, academic and social, emotional, and multi-age were considered in light of what is best for children. Was there anything else considered in implementing the plan? I don't want to be tricky. I've always heard since my kids have been in school that the parents are the first best teacher to their own children. And that's been built into my head from multiple teachers in Lincoln School. And for those of you who don't know, my kids go to Lincoln School. So I was just wondering why there wasn't more parent involvement in the process, the original process, to gauge interest in each school. Why wasn't that part of the process?
I guess I'd ask kind of what specifically, you know, parents were on Think Tank from the original group that started 18 months ago. They've continued to be on it, and then we've had the Think Tank Parent Advisory.
But I mean, why not, now that we've had the staffs decide what they're going to do, how about if we add a stage where let's have some meetings with our parents, let's see if this is really what our parents want to do, and then go from there. I understand we're going to do that. I understand we're going to do those meetings in the next week or so, but it seems to me, and it's just me, it seems like it's a compacted process that maybe it should take a little bit longer to put together.
You know, I found the paragraph in the board report. You know, we have looked at things for the past 18 months, and if we put everything to a vote, whatever we do in education, I'm not sure we'll make any progress or would have made progress for the past 30 years that I've been in education. And I don't know from those of you who have been in it for a while, but I think... You know, we believe we've looked at the different areas of research. We've talked to other people who are doing it. We know, you know, Schaumburg is doing it at how many of their buildings, Kirk? 18 out of 20. And I know the multi-age is where people are getting hung up. Even in the beginning of Think Tank, we heard stories that this district used to be multi-age. So many people have experienced it in the past, but... And even in a vote, what will we decide is the, you know, what's going to say yes or no? I mean, we know anything you do with 100%, we would never do anything.
I would agree with that. I'm sure about that. But I'm just suggesting maybe we're missing a step that we need to add to make sure we're doing what's best for our kids. Everybody feels... the same way.
But they don't, Sam, and I think as a board member, I think that's sort of the concern that there is that while some parents feel they are speaking for the entire district and all of the children at all of the schools, they're not. Nor are certain staff members speaking for all of the staff in the building. I mean, we've had parents show up at our meetings saying that they're speaking for our staff, yet we've had staff members say they never talk to us. So I'm, that concerns me because I feel like then we're holding buildings and children in other buildings almost hostage because a group of people don't support something. And, you know, that's not the way the world works.
Tara, can I make a suggestion? It sounds like Sam is putting a recommendation forward, which is one of the things the board was called here for feedback to do, is to listen and ask questions. And it's certainly, like all the questions that have been asked tonight, fair. I think relatively balanced in terms of what we're looking to get at. You know, one of the things that's evident from the board members, I know that this past weekend, at least 48 of you received an email from me in response to a whole series of emails that came through to board members. And so we know that there are significant pockets of resistance. And one of the things that the board has wanted to do both tonight with these building level meetings over the next 2 weeks and then requesting that the community forum did not happen until those building level meetings occurred, so that very root-based issues, logistical questions, those kind of things that the principals have responded to can be responded to by both the principals and I would hope any and all teachers who can make time, and I know you've made a lot of time already for this, and we thank you as a board, just like the parents have made a ton of time to be here and be engaged in this process. But if teachers can be there, because it's my sense at this point in the conversation, and I think that's some of what Sam is asking in terms of the thought about parents, is that teachers need to be heard. This is your domain. To the extent that you have made some decisions for your different schools, and I think it would be very helpful as we go into these building level meetings that everyone, board members included, as many as we can attend out of the four, hear that from your perspective. So I thank the teachers who have spoken tonight, but I really encourage that voice as we move forward, because in the satisfaction survey, and I pulled it out to Bing tonight, that we did last year, our climate survey for the district, two of the areas consistently at both the Hadley level and also elementary schools for the children in response is that they don't necessarily feel the rigor. These are children saying that. And so I think it's really important for our, for me at least now, to hear as we move forward our teachers as well as our parents to understand what this shift in structure in deepening will do. The other comment I wanted to make, and we just voted on our teachers' contract, which we're very excited about as a district, is I went back to notes from August from one of the collective bargaining meetings, and for the board members who don't serve on the committee, we get PDFs of all the brainstorming. And back in August of 2012, one of the things at the very top of what the teachers' interests were, and this isn't just the teacher team, this is all teachers putting forward their interests for collective bargaining, was around deepening the curriculum, having more time to spend. And that's a piece that I want to understand much more deeply in terms of what teachers mean and need by that. And if this structural change and curriculum change is going to do some of that, then I want to hear from our teachers on how that is important to them. So I think, Sam, your question is important. I think Tara's commentary is also valid, because we've heard a lot of this from all sides of the coin. And we need to continue to have this conversation, and we will for the next 2 weeks. And on March 9th, we really encourage you to come here to Hadley, 8:30 to 10, for a community forum that will be a little less, a little more informal. And also being able now, based on having those building-based meetings, get down to some more of the nitty-gritty in terms of those answers, including some of what you're asking.
So I have many more questions, and they're all based on the individual schools. So I think what I'll do in the interest of brevity tonight is that I will now attend each of those school meetings, mm-hmm. and I'll ask questions to each of the staff. So I don't want to hold anybody else up.
They will potentially, Sam, I just want to note that the time is short. I believe that three of the four schools are holding them on the same night.
Three of the four schools are holding them on the same night. How are you going to do that, Sam?
So I give you my questions, John. You can ask your questions.
May I ask another question? With regards to the social emotional piece of this, which I think, I feel what I've heard or what I've read in the emails is there are sort of two components to it. One is the multi-age, and then two is the transition from morning to afternoon. So when I look at the summary of the research, and when I go out and do my own research, I will say it's a little muddy. I can find research that says when you have multi-age kids, you actually raise the student's social and emotional being by having multi-age. Disobedience actually goes down when you have multi-age. The classroom is more manageable from that perspective. And I know when we went to Lake Forest, when we were considering busing fifth graders to Hadley, one of the schools said, yeah, we bus kindergarten through eighth. And when we started doing that, the number of bus incidents went down significantly because you had different levels. Now, that's a much higher range, but then, you know, you also get studies that say you get higher rates of language exchange between older and younger kids, resulting in a higher language development of children in multi-age. You go on and on, you know, significant improvement in reading and language skills, and then you'll get a study that says, oh my God, you know, worst thing that can happen, putting kids together, confidence. So at the end of the day, when I do my research, I don't see anything that says age grouping is great or multi-age is great. It seems though more on the social-emotional that the multi-age can benefit kids. So again, for you teachers that have had multi-age kids, any guidance you can give us as a board on whether the research is right, wrong, or what your experiences are?
I'm a fifth grade teacher at Franklin currently, and I've had multi-age classrooms, and I've done a lot of research on it myself, and I'm on think tank from the beginning. I'll try not to cough too much. One of the things that I realized with all of this, and talking to parents actually from my kids that I had for 2 years that didn't want to leave, is that the kids really grow so much exponentially in that situation that I don't see in the regular classroom. They do come in running and ready to go into it. When the new kids come into the classroom, when the other half comes in, the grade level below, the older kids take them on, they're leaders, they help them. The kids then go on to the next grade, and the younger kids then become the leaders. And it's made some really, sorry, I get emotional because I just talked to a mom a few days ago. I had a kid who came into the classroom, was the kind of kid who would sit and hide, did not want to talk. She would do her best to be invisible in the classroom. In the 2 years that I had her in the multi-age, she not only became a leader, but continues to be a leader as a college student. And that's huge to me. And that was not, that's just one kid, but it happened to almost all of the kids that I experienced this with. It was beyond belief well worth it. Also speaking to the multi-age and multi-split and all the other terms that are used, the biggest thing to watch for is that how the groups were originally created. What we're doing is very different than what was done 10 years ago, even in this district. That was done primarily because of numbers. We had like half a fourth grade class and a half a fifth grade class, and we smushed them together and taught all of fourth grade and fifth grade in the same classroom, split the day. That was not a good idea. That's not what we are. People that, like myself, that are on the think tank, that have done multi-age before, we were like, we are not doing that. Because it was not beneficial. And that's the kind of stuff that you get reports on, that multi-age is terrible, you know, don't do it, because it's a split. If you try to teach two curriculums and you're one person, it's not possible. You know, you can't teach two classes and do a good job. But what we're proposing is really blending those children with like learners to where they have those other kids that are like themselves. And then the age group, the difference in the ages, kind of just disappears. It's kind of like being on a baseball team or anything else. The kids don't think in terms of ages. They just think in terms of playing the game or whatever. And the kids in the classroom do the same thing. They don't think in terms of fourth grade or fifth grade. That goes away if you don't use those labels. They don't think in terms of that either. And if you're doing what we've proposed with having them all in the same curriculum with the like learners and all the different things, we as teachers can meet their needs in a far better way than we can currently. And then add the specialization into that, and I would be science, not literacy, but I hope. hint, hint. And I can go so much deeper into science and math that I could do this change in math that we're going to be doing and stuff, and not have to spread myself thinly across all subject areas, but I can go deep, twice as deep into the two areas that I would be assigned to, kind of thing. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
In the interest of time, because I know we want to get to public participation, thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
In the interest of time, because I know we want to transition now into public participation, I know that board members have more questions, and I know that we have many opportunities to get to the building leaders and certainly also have send our questions to principals who can then move them on to the teachers. So as soon as we get the dates for all the meetings, maybe we can do a little divide and conquer and make sure that we're aligning our questions so we can ask them in each of the buildings, and so we don't feel so kind of independent of each other. So I'll work on that with the board as well. I want to thank our four building principals for coming tonight, and all the teachers who were able to attend tonight and also help present. And thank you, Karen, also for the updated presentation. Very much.
I'm going to put the mic back.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
You had it all night.
You know what? I'll throw it back up there, Karen, because I just want to explain what we're going into. So thank you, everybody. As I've mentioned previously, our business meeting tonight, actually, when we get into superintendent recommendations, we still have four business items that we need to call on motion and discuss, and so we have still some regular business that we need to get to, some of which might be conversation.
and discussion. So for public participation tonight, again, we ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. I do have six folks who got these into Mrs. Stecker in order, so I will call these in order as was requested. If you can limit your time to 3 minutes, I will be keeping an eye on the clock. But if your comments, as you hear people talk, have really and truly been substantially mentioned, please put that down on a green form. I can't tell you how important it is for us to have that record. Some people put their name, but then they don't put down what the comment is, and so we can't put that in the record. There's no record of that except that the person wanted to speak. So please, if you hear your question, your comment, put it on the green sheet, say heard by whomever the person is, and we'll make sure that Mrs. Stecker gets those. In the interest of other sheets, because I know there are some out there, instead of getting them to Mrs. Stecker right now, you can just bring them up to the table and I'll collect them and we'll put them in order. In the interest of time, we have public participation. There is another public participation opportunity at the end of the meeting. So it is 10 to 10. I'd like to offer us to go till 10:30 for this public participation if we need it all. We'll then go into the regular part of our business meeting to finish up our regular board business, and then we will open public participation again if people want to stay. And again, reminder that on March 9th, we will have a community forum here at Hadley in the LMC. We're back here. We're here, not in the auditorium. And so we, again, welcome that. We will have building leaders and teachers at that, mm-hmm. in that as well.
We were not planning on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's just for the board. My mistake. Just board members, community forum, with those who want to attend. All right? So let me start with the first request to address the board, Amy Watroba.
Thank you.
Amy, you want to take the mic?
Oh, sure.
Sorry. We just have one.
Thank you.
Go ahead and go to the podium. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Amy Watroba. I am a parent of a 4th-1 student. I'll tailor my comments not to the wisdom of any of those substantive proposals here, but simply to the timetable. I heard comments from some of the principals that we are going to change the curriculum. It is going to be more rigorous in response to the Common Core, and that we will be able to deliver that to our students even without the multi-age grouping and all that if necessary. Like, for example, at Churchill, without the specialization until you can do it, you will be able to deliver the curriculum. So I'm submitting that there may be some wisdom and some advantages to taking another year before implementing the delivery recommendation that the administration is making. It's clear that district-wide we are not ready for implementation in second and third grade, and that we may be ready for district-wide implementation in fourth and fifth grade. We've heard concerns raised tonight I think a real advantage to maybe taking another year resonated with some of the concerns raised by the board tonight, that maybe we should consider that there's value in consistent phase-in district-wide. It allows for a more streamlined process. It's better for streamlined assessing district-wide and evaluating which implemented steps or which phases are working and what's not working. It allows the schools to work together. And if you're all doing the same thing at the same time, it seems more efficient that then you could learn from each other. And obviously, every building has little nuances. It also gives us more time to train our teachers. We saw the PDP plan tonight, which gives us only a few institute days before the end of the school year, which is when our students will be assessed and placed into this new program before our teachers have been fully trained in it. I believe some of the presentation acknowledged that there is a knowledge gap, between the teachers involved in Think Tank and those that have not been. I think we should have our teachers trained before they're assessing and placing. It provides an opportunity for the new superintendent to be involved in this process, in the implementation process. It's my understanding he has some STEAM experience. It also provides an opportunity for better parent involvement and understanding, not only in what is happening, but in how our children are being assessed and placed, and how we are, if there's a process in place, if we disagree with the assessment and placement of our children. And also, it's important for the parents to understand the new program. I think the teachers should understand it first, and then we should understand it, because there's value to us being able to support our children at home. We can't support their education if we don't understand what's happening. We need to be able to reinforce what's going on in the classroom. It also gives us the opportunity to prepare our children for these changes.
explain what's going to happen, answer their questions. If we could just take another year to do all of this, then I think a lot of the concerns could be addressed. If the board, if I'm not supporting necessarily going forward with it, but I'd ask to consider taking another year.
Thank you. Lisa Paradis.
Peter, just give it to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. I have a first grader at Ben Franklin, and then I have a 2.5-year-old, so more years at Ben Franklin. I guess I have three main areas of concern as we kind of go through this process. And one, and we've talked about it all night, is why this has been pitched from the beginning as a district-wide implementation. So when you look at each school's rollout, they're vastly different. So what is the opportunity for evaluation at the end of next year if they're all very, very different? My second area is about, Karen addressed Hadley tonight, but if we're trying to prepare our students for 21st century learning and prepare them for what to expect in college and in the workforce, why aren't we starting top down? What is, once they get past Hadley, what are we doing at Glenbard West? And I know that's far down the pike for a lot of our kids, but it's very relevant to our fifth graders. What does it mean? So what's the global perspective? And our high schools fall in a different district, so how would that be addressed potentially in the future? And then my third one comes just from the conversation tonight. It talks about how currently we evaluate our children as a whole learner, and moving forward we're going to evaluate them as like learners. So where's the opportunity for diversity in these classrooms and teaching our children tolerance and how to raise up a lower learner or how to excel because you see another child excelling? So I'm not against this. I just think we need to take our time and be very thoughtful. I understand we need to progress. I understand it needs to happen. But I think in order to get buy-in and be successful, you have to be thoughtful in the approach, and I just professionally, I know to get a team on board, you have to create a with them, what's in it for them. You have to create buy-in and present the upside to it, and I don't feel as a parent that I've gotten that in such a short time frame. We're all human, change is very difficult, and I think when it comes fast and it comes furious with very few details, we become more and more resistant. So I just ask the board tonight to please be thoughtful, give it a little time, and also these are our kids, these are our babies, and many of them are at a very early stage in their learning and their academic career, and what you choose to do on March 11th can affect their academic career in the long term. So.
Bruce Curry. Bruce? My name's Bruce Curry, and I'm a third grade teacher, a bilingual teacher out of Joliet, Illinois. But my daughter is a second grader at Lincoln, and my son is a sixth grader at Hadley. And we've had a really great experience with all of his teachers. I was talking to Penny Kreitzer, who was his first grade teacher over at Lincoln when she was there. And he was a struggling reader, and she just worked so hard with him and did such a great job that I have to take the books out of his hand at night because he loves to read so much. So, are we doing a good job of preparing our children for the demands of the Common Core? So I want to look at this from more of a statistical standpoint. So are we doing a good job? 71% of the teachers think we are preparing our kids for the Common Core, and we're doing a good job. I'm a teacher. I know how much hard work it is, and I know the teachers in this district work very hard. Then I got to the other question, question 24. I feel more work is needed. These are the teachers. I feel more work is needed before before I could support these ideas. And 73% of teachers said that they do think more work is needed. And my gut tells me this does need more time to be implemented, and more time to look and work. Then I looked deeper into the numbers at the second and third grade teachers, because I think that's where a lot of questions come up. And I know my daughter will be going into third grade when this is implemented, so it affects me a lot. And I just really want everything to be as good as it can and as good as it's been for my son.
1 minute, please.
Okay. I am comfortable moving forward with strategic grouping of grades 2 and 3 as proposed. 70% of the second and third grade teachers from the district said they are not comfortable with moving forward. I think these ideas are mostly good for students from a social emotional standpoint. 98% of the teachers think social emotional is just as important as the academics. And I don't want to get back at the loss, but 68% of the second and third grade teachers said no, this would not be good for the social emotional development of their second and third grade kids. I think that's why we're seeing a disjointed plan and implementation.
30 seconds.
My final words would be that I don't think the teachers of this district are completely comfortable with this plan as it's being demonstrated. And as a parent, I'm not comfortable with it for my daughter, especially from a social-emotional standpoint. So I would ask the board respectfully to delay this plan, look at it harder, plan harder, get a parent survey, and see where we are in a year.
Thank you. Thank you. David Rojas? David? Right over here. Thank you, Bruce.
I think I'm a little bit here, so we can just come to the microphone. I'm very thankful for the opportunity to address you again. In the last 3 months, we have been able to come and share our concerns as we heard that. And because answers have not been provided to our satisfaction, those questions have become concerns. So we address you as parents in the community, but not just as parents, but also as professional educators. We have heard from teachers, reading specialists, building administrators. And I'm approaching you today as a principal in a kinder, pre-K through fifth grade building. I understand what implementation means. I understand when innovation comes into our buildings. And I understand how long it takes. I understand how long it's going to take for you teachers. We're in the same boat. We are adjusting to the Common Core standards. On top of that, that's not statewide, but nationwide. On top of Common Core standards, you're going to be implementing STEM. You're going to be implementing multi-age, which is quite a feat. And we really want you to be prepared. So I'm speaking directly to your teachers. We want you to be prepared. What the district has left in this school year is 2.5 days of professional development. We don't believe that's enough for you. I know we have the summer. A lot of us work through the summer in preparing our classes, but still it's not going to be enough. If we want to provide professional development optional for teachers, what is going to ensure that this implementation is going to be systematic through the district? That's a big concern that we have. The other piece that I have as a big concern, as an educator myself, is the fragmentation of our curriculum. Common Core standards call for the integration of subjects. We want to teach literacy throughout the day. I understand you have 6 or 7 literacy groups in the morning, but if you have only the morning, you're going to have a hard time fitting those 6 read groups. Instead of splitting and reading and math, if you or science, you have your whole day with your students, and if you are integrating social studies, science, and math through your day, you can use literacy throughout the day, and you can have your literacy groups in the morning, in the afternoon. It is your classroom. You know your students best. This is going to be very hard. If as a science teacher, you have a student who's a struggling reader, you cannot have them or provide them access to the text. You need to be a literacy teacher as well. There's no other way around it. Even those teachers who are teaching math and science need to teach their students to get access to the text. That's going to be important, and that's my concern. I don't think we're preparing our teachers And I think that's going to be a detriment for the students and also for the teachers. We want to support your teachers. We want to provide you the time that you need to be prepared. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Steve, and I'm not going to pronounce your last name.
Sini.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's go briefly at the previous board meeting. My wife's a scientist. I'm an engineer. I was involved with STEM starting from about 1989. It was called Hands on Science. It evolved through. I was on an NSF and EM grant for joint project for a while through the automotive industry. Big supporter of STEM. Really not happy with the current curriculum. Love the teachers. Build a curriculum that is not good at District 41. What I would encourage is a lot of change has been thrown up on the board. We've asked several times to see what are the metrics, what are the benefits tied to each change. I don't think we've seen that. If a particular change is tied to a benefit to the community, we should be able to go to Schaumburg or Waukesha or someplace, see their test scores go up. If we're worried about test scores, then let's make sure that those changes tie to those. Once we know what proposed changes tie to benefits, then we can lay out a roadmap. Once we have a roadmap, we can begin to implement change. I did a fairly lengthy letter to the board, and that was the point that I tried to nail down. Let's get some metrics around this. We've got a lot of great, soft ideas. Let's tie it, and then we can tie to change. Realize that teacher training is key. One of the key takeaways from STEM on the program that I was involved in was it wasn't the darn kids. They came to us because they wanted the money for the kids. It's not the kids. It's bringing the teachers it's bringing the teachers to a change that things become very soft. It's encouraging kids to be happy with the ambiguity, right? 2.5 days, can't find any school district that would say that 2.5 days is significant for that kind of change, right? I found metrics more like even now it was 2 weeks, the time that I did it, which 10 years ago, 15 years ago, kind of scary, right? It was more like 4 weeks that they were talking. And those are school districts in this area, Joliet, some of the smaller ones down south. With that, once you've got a roadmap and change, you can lay out a real plan. But I saw tonight wasn't plans. I'm a program manager, leads large change programs. I didn't see plans. I saw building diagrams with buildings. A plan is a schedule, it's staffing, it's risks, it's benefits, it's costs. We need to get to a roadmap with a plan. Thank you.
Sue Burdett? Sue, did you leave? Mike Conoscenti? Oh, thank you, Mike. Did I say that correctly?
You nailed it.
Okay. It's my English teacher.
My name is Mike Housay. I have two children at Ben Franklin, a fourth grader and a second grader. And I guess I'll just start. I heard two different arguments about parent involvement, and I certainly, running a business, I can appreciate you get too many cooks in the kitchen and nothing can get done. But I can also tell you, as a parent, we're real good at talking each other off the ledge. And so, for myself, I came to the very first meeting here with my pitchfork ready to go, and I see a lot of benefits now that I didn't at that first meeting. I still have a lot of concerns, but just food for thought for the next big idea that comes from 41. I think you should get parents involved at that 1 month mark, not 18 months. My big thing that I want to talk about is I'm really in support of teacher specialization. I think it's a great idea, and I've heard from a couple principals tonight saying, well, we might not be able to do that because of staffing. And I would just implore the board and the entire teaching community to not let that be a hurdle for you to achieve that. If staffing is your only hurdle, you need to work around that. And if it's class size, ideally if you're saying that third graders are supposed to be 25 and it's only going to end up to be 20 for this next third grade class, well then so be it. Go with 20 and make that happen. So that's my comments. Thanks.
Thank you. Kelly Hay, Han Hale. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's your handwriting.
Please put your tomatoes away. My name is Kelly Hayne. I am a kindergartner at Church Hill Elementary, as well as a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I am actually here to speak in favor of the Think Tank proposal. I first heard of this initiative at my first PTA meeting at Church Hill in September. this fall and came home from the meeting thrilled to share the information with my husband. I have been attending most of the parent meetings, sessions, and some of the board meetings as I could, and joined the parent advisory board for the think tank. I don't want to spend the next 3 minutes up here rehashing the potential benefits of this proposal, because I think that Karen has shared those along with the teachers and administrators that have spoken tonight. However, I feel very strongly that this initiative will only enhance the good, solid education that our students are receiving in District 41. I do want to stress, though, that I think that this district could definitely do better at meeting the needs of all of our learners, and I think that that is what this proposal in multi-age could potentially do for us. Many of those who are opposed to this initiative say, why mess with something that's working? Or, this is a great district, and our kids are getting a great education. But as a new member to this community, I have been really surprised at the lack of trust that this community seems to have in our administrators, our teachers, and our school board to make decisions that are in the best interest of our children to ensure that they are ready for the 21st century that we don't even understand. It is apparent to me from the presentations of the administrators tonight that they have taken the time to think about these proposals and meet with their teachers and have given this all significant consideration and discussion. And as a community and a board, I think we need to heavily weigh this. I don't think that they're doing this just at a whim or taking a dart and throwing something at the board and asking, will this work? With regards to the timeline, I think that it's important to keep in mind that we are not necessarily overhauling the curriculum with this initial phase. And to me, it makes sense to implement the structural changes this year and allow the parities to adjust and refine to the new school day before the new curriculum for STEM is introduced and implemented. Frankly, I don't believe that the traditional elementary school structure is going to continue to be sufficient enough in the future years, and even question if it does now, and feel our district should be a leader in improving public education or education in general instead of waiting to be a follower. I encourage the board to not only approve the think tank proposal, but also ensure that there is a further initiative to evaluate how we are working with our kindergartners and first graders to ensure that they also are going to get ready for the 21st century, i.e. full-day kindergarten. And honestly, and with Mr. Klesvitz, I also encourage you to go back and encourage the second and third grade teachers at Churchill to evaluate specialization, because I do think that there are benefits to that. And honestly, I'm most disappointed that my first grader will not reap the benefits of the think tank initiative potentially next year, but I'm excited for what she will experience in 2014-2015. Thank you.
Thank you. David, preach. Thanks. David, preach. Oh, sorry. Steve, are you with us? Steve? Steve, can you hear it?
I'm here.
You're good. You can hear everything okay? Thank you.
Thank you,
Steve. Okay. Yes, thank you.
My concern is mainly around the multi-age. And starting off, my experience is usually that changes to the organizational structure are the easiest things that you can implement, but they have the least effect on performance. Really, it's the quality of staff and the culture of continuous improvement that are the things that change outcomes the most. And we heard earlier questions on how willing the teachers were to implement this. I really think asking that is the wrong question. Any good staff is going to be able to implement a plan that we put in front of them. The big question here is whether this plan, and I think particularly the multi-age classrooms, results in improved outcomes for the students. And I don't see any clear data that's been shown that proves that. We've got a lot of anecdotal examples, academic papers. I read through the sources that were posted on all the kind of recommended reading materials for multi-age. And really, they're all over the place. There's nothing clear showing that there's going to be a improved outcome of education by implementing this structure. A lot of the examples are shown are schools that have financial problems and do it to save money. We're clearly not in that difficult place.
1 minute.
So I think we've got a lot of these difficulties, and they're showing up in the scattershot implementation that the schools are planning. I think that's a difficult point of this. And I'd really like to see the district concentrate their efforts on the STEM training. I'm an engineer. I think it's extremely important. But I don't think we should be adding into this all the unnecessary challenges of switching over to multi-age classrooms. And you know, we heard earlier that too much change was a problem in moving to specialization. That seems to say clearly to me that we can't compound the problem with multi-age. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a first grader and a third grader in Lincoln, and I'm there often. I volunteer as I can, and of the many conversations that I've had with various teachers, I'm surprised at what the Lincoln Elementary teacher had to say. I'm sorry, the principal. I can't pronounce your last name, I'm so sorry. And it's my conversations with them do not reflect what was said here about 100% buy-in from second and third graders. I know of several second and third grade teachers at Lincoln that are very upset, that have felt pressured into this. And I personally feel a very big lack of trust in this whole process. We had a survey, and yet we were told that the survey data did not match up. And I know that some of these teachers have even gone to their association for support because they feel pressured. So I just wanted to put that out there because that is not only my feeling. There's a lot of parents that gather picking up kids at Lincoln after school, and this is an ongoing conversation that we have, and so I just wanted to make sure that that was noted as well.
Thank you. Jim Patterman. Jim Patterman? Thank you.
Hi, thank you. I'm not an educator, so I'm not going to comment on the program itself. I think you've gotten lots of insight and input into that. I manage a sales and marketing organization. I've been through a ton of organizational change. I've been brought into organizations to manage organizational change. So I just want to comment on that and provide some insight, at least from my perspective. And I think you've heard from some different business folks in terms of the change initiatives itself. And I'm not going to hit on some of the points that have already been made. But first and foremost, when you implement a change, it's critical to have objective and clear metrics. And the chart that was shown up there with the MAP score was 1 year, 2012. That does not show a trend. So my question is there a trend where the scores are going down and we're trying to turn them back up? That was 1 year. So I'm wondering if there's an objective to bring a downward trend back up, and then what is the objective? What is the outcome? What are we trying to achieve from a quantitative perspective? I heard a lot of qualitative things, which are really nice, warm comments. There's always an ROI associated with the change. There's a cost and there's a benefit. And I don't know what the cost is. There's financial cost, there's change cost, there's emotional cost, there's social economical cost. And if we factored all of those costs into the benefit that we're going to reap on the backside of this. And if we have, how long, what is the time frame for that benefit to be achieved? Is it 1 year? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? And if it's longer than a year, do we have short-term casualties? When you go through a change, during that change process, we have something we call the trough of disillusionment, which is you go from the honeymoon period, everyone's really excited, bought in, and then the change starts. And it's not everything it was cracked up to be. And people suffer during that trough of disillusionment. So we always recommend a pilot, right? And I think the semantics are extremely important. Partial implementation, to me, does not indicate a pilot at all. A pilot is a focus group where you can measure at the beginning and the end, and you can measure whether it was approved. And at the end of that pilot, there's a go, no-go decision. All plans are not perfect, as someone said. And at the end of it, you just don't know what you don't know. And I think a pilot can help us figure that out. And I think we have a great opportunity to pilot. You know, at the end of this, I think we need a clearly defined cost-benefit analysis. We need to define what success is on the back end. We need to define what that time frame is for success when we're going to achieve it. We need to make sure that nobody, my children and your children, don't get hurt in that trough of disillusionment, because that will happen. We need to understand who our project owners are, and I would recommend a pilot. There was a principal that got up and talked about this benefiting our students, and I don't think of them as my student. I think of it as my child. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Alicia Hopper.
I'm Alicia Hopper. I have students at Lincoln, one in fifth grade and one in second grade. And I've read a lot of the think tank stuff. I think the ideas are very, very good. But everything I've read says you have to have your community buy-in. And from what I see here today and in other meetings, there's still a lot of questions and concerns in our community. And what I'm asking the board to do is to wait, to make sure there's more of the community on board, so that we can all go into this implementation and make it successful. I don't see what waiting a year is going to hurt if it makes everyone understand it more. Because I only understand a little, and I've been to almost every meeting. And it keeps changing and changing. So I'm just asking you to listen and look at your community and make sure that we are on board before you go forward.
Thank you.
Sarah Michael. I have a son at Hadley, a fourth grader, and a kindergartner at Lincoln, and a three-year-old. I was also a teacher with a master's in my previous life. I agree with everything that Alicia just said. I have a couple questions and then something I'd like to say. As far as the parameters that are going to be used for student placement, what is the RIT band or the MAP score parameters? Data needs to be triangulated, as the administration has admitted. What is the third measurement that will be used for the placement? And then when are the parents going to be informed about their children's classroom assignments? Parents will want to know what level their child is being placed in. Have you planned time for parents to be able to advocate for their child when they don't agree with placement? I know, for example, my children do not test well on the MAP test, right, older two. It doesn't align with how they perform in school, how they do on the ISAP. So if that were one of the main ways they were placed, that it just wouldn't necessarily be the right place for them. Your concern with the future of our children in District 41 is very admirable. If you truly are as concerned about every child, you will take each step forward very carefully. There are no do-overs with our children. If, for example, the proposal is fully implemented at Lincoln next year and all does not go well for any number of reasons, you all may say, okay, well, we can do a better job next year, but my daughter and all the other fifth graders don't get it next year. I also presently have a sixth grader at Hadley, and seeing how much what happens in fifth grade impacts everything that they do at Hadley, and it gives me huge concern about playing with the fourth and fifth graders. There is no room for error in fifth grade. And their education could be devastated, as Jim so eloquently stated during the trial of, I hope I said that right, the trial of disillusionment. I do think there are many, many good things about this proposal. The mixed age, the teacher specialization, I just think we're rushing into this, and more time needs to be taken. We need no more parent buy-in. As someone else said, I think it was Sam, the parents, as parents, we need to support what our kids are doing and understand what they're doing and be their teacher at home as we are their first teacher in life. And if we can't be behind what they're doing, it's not going to work. And I just think you really need to take another year, take more time, give the teachers all the possible training they can have. I don't think taking one more year to do this is going to hurt, but I think it could do some damage with our children, especially our fifth graders. You just can't mess with fifth grade. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam. I'm going to stand up so I can be heard. I have a time check here. We have time for one more speaker tonight, Jennifer. And I know that you have some material here. You want to leave this for the board?
Yeah.
Okay. And there are a few others here. If these are the only ones left and you've already been heard, let me give your names. Sherry Kempf, Stephanie, Nita, Jenna Kautzis, and Kevin Rath, Mr. Rath. If your comments, your observations, your questions have been stated and we can include that note on here, I would appreciate that. If it's something completely different, then I welcome. If it's all right with the board, since there's only four left, let's allow that last 12 minutes. But if your comments have been stated, I would ask that you tell us that, and then we can get on to the rest of board business. So we have a good hour and a half of business right now still. Okay? Jennifer.
Hi. I've been coming to a lot of these meetings, and as Mr. Kenwood stated, you can find educational research to support whatever position you want to take. That's why this is so confusing. So for the last month, I've taken it upon myself to look at the solid research, peer-reviewed research, on certain components of this proposal, and I've been trying to find what the common denominator is for all of this research. So the first thing I hit was multi-age grouping. As stated at Mrs. Schweikhofer's principal meeting, and as Karen Carlson said tonight, multi-age grouping is not effective if the teachers are following separate curriculum. It is more effective when they are following one curriculum. Multi-age grouping is less successful when the teacher needs to cover the two curriculums, like between 4-5 split. However, looking at all the research, and I compiled a lot, and I wrote it on the list for the board members, the single common denominator is for the students to stay together with the same teacher and the same group of peers for the entire school day. In that case, multi-age grouping, even with a wide age range, can be successful. However, when the students have to flip between teachers, it is not successful at all. The second thing I looked at was tracking and ability grouping, and I hesitate to use this term as the rest of the administration has adamantly denied that assigning children to classrooms based on their math or Fonseca-Pinel score is not tracking. However, they do agree that children will be assigned to a class based on triangulated data from a variety of sources. Tracking or ability grouping can take on many different forms. According to Patricia Cunningham and Richard Ellington, the most common arrangement is for teachers to have those heterogeneous homeroom, science, and social studies classes, but then to do some sort of ability grouping for math or reading. Okay? The problem arises with how to accurately and objectively assign children and the disproportionate number of students who really belong in each track. Mathematically, this makes sense to me. When I look at your math score spreadsheet up there, I cannot figure how you would make the class sizes even close to being the same size. Okay. It needs to be addressed that ability grouping only serves the truly gifted learner. Average and below average children suffer. The third thing I looked at was the amount of students. In Donald Graves' book, A Fresh Look at Writing, and other sources, these authors maintain that the student-teacher relationship is one of the most important aspects of motivating children, in this case, to write, Graves is a writing expert. Writing, as with all learning, is uniquely personal. And an expert teacher needs to take the time to learn about her students. That's why elementary teachers are methodology experts and child development experts and not curriculum experts like they are in middle school and high school.
30 seconds.
Okay. I know the district is concerned about the new cut scores and the number of children who are going to be meeting or exceeding standards. The Common Core curriculum, which you can find more information at corestandards.org, is written for grade levels, not grade bands. When you unpack those standards in literacy and math,
you can see how the standards change and become more complex as the grade levels build. Grouping will make this process much harder for the classroom teacher. So I would recommend hiring your specialist, or if that's cost prohibited, having your resource teachers, your already existing specialists, your TLTs or ELLs, and flooding the classrooms at their win time. Okay? My point is there are ways to continue to meet and exceed standards despite these new cut scores. And as a final note, when I saw how you were evaluating the program, if one of the reasons you're doing this is because of the new cut scores, I didn't see anything on the evaluation about looking at the actual test scores and if they rise or go down. Thank you.
I'll make sure that the board gets copies.
Thank you.
Sherry Kemp.
Oh, I told him to call him back. Address the board meeting.
Oh, not during. Okay.
Thank you.
Hello. I'm speaking tonight in hopes that I could have you, the board, reconsider the think tank proposals for implementing their ideas in the next school year for our district. I feel like some areas have already been altered based on the feedback from the community, and I truly do appreciate that. I also feel that there is still more work to be done, altered and adjusted, if we do want it to work well and be the best for the teachers and the students. Another thing I would like to add is a request for the parent survey to be done to get the parents' perspective on the current proposals that are being made at each school. Between my husband and I, we have attended Abraham Lincoln, Forest Glen, Hadley, and Glenbard West. My degree specialty is early childhood education, and I've been employed for more than 20 years in Glen Ellyn as a preschool teacher. We are very aware of the challenges, changes, and demands that are being made on our children, and we want the very best for our children. We have two daughters at Abraham Lincoln. One is in first grade and one is in third grade. And we can honestly say in our family that we have felt that 5 out of the 6 teachers that we've had have given 100% to our children. And I can say, Ms. DePape, Ms. Feeney, Ms. Swatek, Ms. Sandes, Ms. Bishop, every TLT teacher we've ever had, wonderful teachers. I support them. I love them. I think they're great, and they work above and beyond. They did their jobs. They gave their hearts to the learning environments and to my girls, especially on those occasional days when they have had life struggles. My children and our family have been blessed to have the best experiences with those teachers. With this new plan, I am very concerned, especially with the social-emotional needs being met. I can no longer speak on the amounts or percentages for our school because that has been taken out of the book for today, but especially in the second and third grade levels. I feel strongly that at the very least, if the board does want to try some sort of a pilot, we should not be trying it with that age group included. This is a vital time for those children when positive peer relationships and teacher relationships are still being made that greatly influence their social emotional development and help to predict later social adjustments as well as school success.
30 seconds.
Having those supportive and responsive relationships between a teacher and a student is still an essential component needed to promote healthy development in all areas. I would like to see this continue to be worked on before we would implement any portion of it. But at the very least, I would appreciate the board to decline trying it at any of the schools in the second and third grade level. Please slow this process down. Also, I would like to see it voted on a broken down level, just as Mr. Ellis stated earlier. I think that we need to break down what we're voting on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, if anybody has anything written that they want to leave with me, please do so.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Clark. I'm going to apologize in advance because a lot of what I wrote down to say and had it organized, a lot of people covered, so I don't want to repeat it. So I'm going to try to be concise. But the first thing I just want to say is I'm just a little saddened to hear the term resistance used tonight. I think that there are a lot of parents that have concerns maybe about the details of the plan, or the implementation plan, but don't overall hate it. And maybe we're just trying to get dialogue going, get the community involved. But I just kind of I take offense to being called the resistance because I'm trying to engage and be involved in what I think is important to my kids. And I know that people are in favor, and I don't disagree with them either. I think it's great to hear the pros and the cons. I think that's part of the problem of what's happened with this whole process is we are looking at it as the resistance and who's in favor. And clearly the message has been sent by a lot of people that buy-in from both the teachers and the community is important. And I think we're here to plead to the board because you're representing us. You're voting on this on our behalf. And we want you to know how we think. And we don't really feel that our voices have been taken into account. I do not doubt that the decision makers, the think tank members, and the administration are clearly presenting what they think is best for our kids. They're not trying to hurt our kids. I don't think that that's the intent at all. But I feel like they're doing it in spite of the fact of what teachers and parents are telling them. And I think we're also experts in our kids and their education as well. And so our opinions should be taken into account. I just find it funny that the Q&A sessions at the schools, it was mentioned that the board members are invited to go to all those Q&As and hear what the parents think, but three of them are scheduled on the same night. So how can the board members really go hear what the community says? They can't be in three places at once. And somebody mentioned the importance of taking a parent survey after we implement to see how it's going. Well, why are we not taking a survey before to see what we think about it? Another thing I just want to talk about, Lincoln a little bit. I love Lincoln. It's a great school. I love the teachers. And I don't understand why the district isn't analyzing the teacher survey data and giving a directive to the schools and the principals. I feel like we're putting the responsibility on the principals and their schools to make a decision, and they're taking heat for it. And I don't think it's fair. From Lincoln, I will say this to kind of mirror what Cindy said. I do think there is concern with second and third grade teachers. I've talked to some of them as well, and I kind of compare it to the movie 12 Angry Men. You put a bunch of people in a room, and some agree, some disagree, and you know what's going to happen. If you're the couple that don't agree, are you going to give in to the people that agree because you're feeling the pressure, you're feeling the stress, you're feeling coerced, you're feeling what's going to happen anyway. I don't doubt what Linda says, that the teachers said, okay, we're on board, but what kind of happened behind the scenes there when they were all meeting? And why didn't we just, if their Lincoln survey data was compromised, wasn't second and third across the district kind of a similar feeling that this really isn't maybe what's best for second and third, so why are we not approaching all schools at second and third the same way? Thank you. Sorry.
That's okay. Thanks, Stephanie. Okay. Nita?
Thank you.
Well, hi, my name is Nina Yelenowskis. I have a second grader at Lincoln and a sixth grader at Adley. Overall, we've had an excellent experience at both schools, so no complaints about that. I really do think we are moving too quickly. My big concern is that we haven't heard, but we have spent so much time on the pros and the positives and the rosy picture of how wonderful this is. Based on a survey, we know that not all teachers are on board and not all group members are on board. Really, I would suggest to the board to not only invite, but insist for them to join us on March 9th or whenever, so we can actually hear their side of the picture. I'm disappointed that they're not actually speaking here, and I'm kind of wondering why. And I think we need to include them. I think they could actually shed some light on the flaws of this system, and maybe we can learn something from that so that we can figure out, is this the right path for our kids? That's all I have to say.
Thank you. You're the caboose.
I'm prepared for my Marco Rubio moment. I wrote this before the meeting tonight, so the facts have changed. The sentiment behind it has not. Shock, anger, disgust, resentment, disappointment, bitterness, amazement,
bewilderment, hatred, irritated were all things that I felt in the past 72 hours. And that's only learning about the plan for Lincoln. I can't imagine what some of the other parents have felt about their child's school. This whole process seems like it could be played out in movie quotes. First, it was, what we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. Both sides have tried to reach out to each other, but it seems like only one side has resonated with hundreds of parents, and that's the group represented by the parents of Y41. From the beginning, these parents were asking the questions that needed to be answered and trying to fill in the blanks represented by the think tank's research, because we were not getting that information from the administration. What we got was a variation on the why don't you trust us theme and being portrayed as bullies. The only bullying that appears to have happened occurred with the teachers of Lincoln. It was made clear from the survey results, and yes, they did change. Why is that? Something that Y41 fought to have done and released to the public, that the teachers of Lincoln have serious reservations about moving forward with this plan. Only 40% felt comfortable moving forward with a 2-3 grouping. Less than half surveyed thought this was good for our children's social emotional standpoint, a big concern for many parents. And probably the most damning statistic of all, over 70% said they felt more work was needed before they could support these ideas. So how could Lincoln possibly move forward with a full-on implementation? The only logical conclusion that can be reached is that something or someone must have said or done something to change this hybrid we're allegedly calling a partial implementation. For me and many others, the think tank has failed the show me the money test. We continually ask for the think tank to show us the data behind their research and prove that this would improve test scores and were delayed many times, if ever answered at all.
30 seconds.
Y41 had to submit a Freedom of Information Act request in order to get the teachers' comments on the survey results released. To date, they have been denied. The teachers deserve to have their voices heard, free from reprisal. What is there to hide or obfuscate? Could it be the fact that all of their data is based on ideas that have not been tested or proven? Why are we playing pin the tail on the donkey with our children's education?
Please finish, Mr. Brown.
No problem. This is by no means a pilot program, or excuse me, a partial implementation program if all four schools are doing something different. I'm only scratching the surface with the concerns I share with many others in this room and those who have passed. We thank the think tank for the time given to this project. We want this done right for the sake of all the children in District 41 current.
Thank you, Mr. Rath. I want to be fair. Thank you. If you want to leave your written document, then I'll make copies along with Jennifer's too.
Awesome.
The email.
Yeah, I have it.
Email. You can send it to everybody, yeah. I can make sure we get it out. We'll send it to everybody.
That's what I do.
Yeah, and I'll make copies of Jennifer's, but you want to the email. Thank you. All right.
But it's still
I think anytime you're a bullying group, you got to ask for sorry, you know, how you're going to do it. And I'll illustrate
you guys
it
in
how you
yeah.
apply yourself. And first of all, I think you can do this the right way, but I think the natural tendency is to want white people.
Yeah,
but relatively homogeneous.
I mean, the idea is to, you know, be able to provide as much commonality as we can ahead of the meeting, and that's, you know, really what we're trying to get at. But
yeah.
I understand there's a lot of questions that are kind of underneath me. But yeah, send me.
Oh, and I'll give you some ideas about how you might kind of
Okay. Thanks. Good to meet you. Thanks for staying and coming up.
Oh, sure.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I know. They're going to pee. Sam, can I go to the bathroom?
I dropped this off. I skipped some stuff.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'll make copies of it. Thank you. Thank you. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's a very high risk, but there is a lot of risk.
What? Hello, Patrick and Dean and Joe. You're the only ones going to stay for the really exciting part of the meeting?
Everybody else is gone.
Can we take John back here?
Yeah. John, bathroom break? John Kenwood, bathroom break?
Sorry, what?
Are you taking a bathroom break?
Yeah.
Because we got to start in 2 minutes. We have so much to do. Mrs. Millich, send your notes in. Well, she was jumping at the bit. Jumping at the bit. Well, I felt that for a little bit. He was. I almost interrupted him. I can't say that. I think Linda and I think Linda just said that. Yeah. Oh. Absolutely.
Name of parents.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree.
Sam has said it.
Reconvening. 1 minute. I've never gotten to use that before. Yeah, no, it actually works. We got to call Steve back. Okay.
Come on, I gotta go
and get Kenwood. He's yelling
it up.
Let's go.
There you go.
9 or 8? Is it 8 or 9 to get out?
8.
Come on.
I just got it. I'm sorry that I'm not really mailing, but just as we're in construction, we get crazy phone calls and texts from my husband.
Uh-oh.
Like, I'm Wednesday, please get canceled. And as long as it's rebooked this all to tomorrow night, and hopefully we'll get out.
Sorry about that. I don't know why we lost you, but
Yeah, all of a sudden it just
disconnected. Well, there were only 5 speakers after that, so
anything new?
No. Nothing new. All right. Okay, consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
All.
Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, and we had an update tonight on the employment, job sharing leave of absence, leaves of absence, and resignations. Item 2, finance, facility, and operations, the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue, expenditure summary report, the summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, and the 2012-2013 FOIA report. And item 3, other matters, which include the approval of board meeting minutes, the February 11th, 2013 regular board meeting, the February 11th, 2013 Board of Education regular meeting in closed session, the semi-annual review of closed session minutes, recommend that the continued need for confidentiality still exists to all of these closed session minutes or recordings identified, and finally, the destruction of closed session audio recordings as we have done in the past. We recommend the destruction of these older audio recordings.
Motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Roll call.
Before we do roll call, if I just make one, I'm sorry that there are not more people here for this announcement. Is the Hadley principal announcer? We'd like to announce that Steve Diveling will be joining the District 41 staff as a principal at Hadley Junior High effective July 1. Mr. Diveley will be replacing Dr. Dranzoff, who is retiring June 30th. Mr. Diveley began his career as a history teacher at Waukegan High School in 1994 before moving into school administration as an assistant principal at Woodland Middle School in Gurnee and then at Scullin Middle School in Naperville. For the last 8 years, Mr. Diveley has been the principal at Heritage Middle School in Plainfield District 202, where they have earned the Illinois Horizon School to Watch from the Association of Illinois Middle Schools in 2010 and are being considered for that award again this year. And we are thrilled to welcome Mr. Diveley to the team in District 41. He excelled from a field of 98 applicants and interviewed with parents, staff, and students at Hadley Junior High in the months of January and February. And we are very pleased to bring this recommendation to you.
Thank you very much. We're excited.
Does Diveley know that he has to sing a musical man?
Oh, we haven't told him that yet.
Be a part of it. All right. Okay, roll call.
Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Item B, Superintendent's recommendations. At its February 11th, 2013 meeting, the board discussed the following matters. Number one, Hadley Junior High School LMC remodel bid results. The administration's recommendation to award the contract to the second lowest bidder, Half Builders Incorporated of Waukegan, Illinois, with a base cost of $945,000. And alternates valued at $179,000 for a total bid of $1.124 million. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
Thanks, Bob, to the other information. You answered some questions that I had. You know, but really looking forward to seeing the improved or more better resources for the curriculum and the tie-in to that. So, thank you.
Yeah. Also, thank you, and I know that, Karen, you responded to this. I had probably similar questions to you, Dan, and it was around the idea of, you know, this space becoming, you know, an updated learning and media resource center. And thank you, Chris Abbott, for staying here tonight.
The whole night.
The whole night. But I asked the question, so we know we don't have a lot of flexibility in this building. So what does it mean to allow to be doing this renovation in terms of classrooms? And I think, Karen, you mentioned that we could fit in approximately 6 classrooms in here at any given time during the day so we can get people out of pods if they need to. Chris, that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And really, I think to connect it with what we heard prior to this is space like this would be some more innovative use of teaching pedagogy. I think you would see flexible grouping in this space, things that the current configurations of the classrooms just don't allow for.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be the space where you would see the problem-based learning, mm-hmm. the inquiry-based learning, a place where you know, students could come, find answers to questions, and then create their own new knowledge and some sort of product that would demonstrate their learning with the new proposed media creation lab. And the small group classrooms, the small group areas, you wouldn't have kids working in the hallways anymore. If you, you know, walk through the hallways, you'll see kids working in the hallways because they have no other place to go. And the teachers want to have that innovative teaching, but they just are constrained by the physical limitations of the 1950s building. So this space would, I think, allow for that sort of innovative teaching that we heard so many people so eloquently speak to tonight.
Yeah.
voice a little bit. So if approved, I think you would see sort of maybe a backwards implementation of the sort of teaching that we saw people speaking about today. Mm-hmm. You would have the facility, the delivery would then follow. Mm-hmm. Now teachers would have the freedom to do sort of the creative things that we heard about, but now they would have a space and a venue in which to do that. So I think ultimately, it's not about the architecture, it's not about paint or new furniture, it's about a new way of teaching and allowing kids to have the space in which to explore those new avenues. So,
thank you.
I'll stop.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I mean, we really appreciate you staying in order to give that insight and answer any questions.
Sue and Jeannie as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sue and Jeannie, thank you very much.
I do want to mention that your request at the last meeting certainly is not going to go unnoticed, and we would make sure that you'll work with Bob and people here to ensure that we maintain the Novelli memory.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Sue. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. I can certainly stay and answer questions.
Yeah. Any other discussion? Questions? We're good? All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Vazquez?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 2, 2013 classroom furniture and equipment bid. The administration's recommendation. Am I yelling?
Okay.
Sorry.
You want the microphone?
I'm like kind of screaming.
All good.
Sorry. 2013 classroom furniture equipment bid. The administration's recommendation to approve the posting of advertisement for bid and release of bid documents for 2013 classroom furniture and equipment. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion? This is for bid. Okay. All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Yes. Item 3, fund balances committed to long-term capital projects. The administration's recommendation to approve the following allocation of fund balances over the next two-year period. $500,000 to fund current capital projects to be completed during the summer of 2013. $1.5 million to fund roofing and HVAC projects at various sites yet to be determined. $3 million to fund the long-term facility needs of the district, including possible property acquisitions. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
Bob, I apologize for not asking this earlier, but why are we only allotting $500,000 to the current capital projects to be done this summer? Is there current budgeted dollars that are going to cover the rest of the anticipated costs?
That's correct. Yes, and we're also a little late now, being that it's up really almost March 1st in terms of bringing additional recommendations for capital projects for next summer. So we're focusing our efforts on the Hadley LMC and then painting Hadley for summer 2013.
Is that what part of the $500,000 is?
That would be used for, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still struggle with this approach based on all the comments I made last time. So.
Mm-hmm. Is there flexibility if the board adopts this to make a change to some of the allocated funding depending on our future conversations?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It depends on where we place the funds. As long as they stay in the general fund, then that conversation can continue to occur. If we earmark it, then we're committed to it.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, the indication is that it's all going to run, it's going to remain in the general fund.
Well, it will remain as part of our current operating funds.
Right, because that's not going to be specifically
on the such, but rather we have the ad, O&M, and so forth. Mm-hmm.
But we are not going to, I think the question is, we won't set up a separate fund for roofs.
No, I
won't.
No,
right,
I won't.
Okay. That's what I want to be clear about. Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
All right, thank you, everyone. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
No.
Mr. Vondrak?
Nuts.
Yes. I thought he said nuts.
Mr. Shower?
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Item four, board policy and procedure revisions, second reading and adoption. The administration's recommendation to approve and adopt Section 3 board policy and procedures, as well as policies and or procedures that have been updated as a result of changes in Illinois or federal law that require revisions in order for the district to be compliant or to reflect current policy and or practices. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? I want to thank Sam and I for our work on that. And Maureen and Anne. Thank you.
Erica, I can thank you for hard work
thank
on
you,
policy.
Sure.
You don't
policy.
Have to thank yourself.
I love policy.
But it is a lot of work, and
we like it.
To you guys for that.
We like it, don't we, Sam?
You did.
You already got 4 years coming up, so maybe two of those.
Bite your tongue.
That's right. Thing. Roll call.
Dude, that was funny.
roll yeah. call, please.
Yeah, sure.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
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 Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you very much. Board reports. Any quick board reports?
Yeah, I was at Hadley CTA. Thank you for, they talked a little bit about the LLC here. Sorry, I still call it the library. And they're looking for, they're putting their slating nominating committee. I think Lori Taylor is continuing though as board president. However, the only thing I wanted to bring up was they talked about, there was a report given about like their teacher grants. They have this fund that they like to give to and teachers make requests. The only one that I had, I mean, it was a great program that they've done. My only issue is they gave like 10 books, like buying classroom books out of this fund. And my comment, and I know they said, I'm sure Chris shared it with you, but you know, that's our job. That those grant dollars that come from PTA should be funding those different projects. But I would prefer that they, and I don't know what happened, but you know, hopefully they will go through the proper channels so that we, the district, can buy their books to fix the classroom rather than going to the parents.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you guys said no. I'm just, you know, that we need to do. Administration within this building needs to do a better job of reminding staff that is a district obligation, not a PTA obligation, to replenish our books.
We just voted books out.
True.
Let's restate that. I attended CIT this past Thursday, the 21st. It was an excellent meeting. I don't know how we begin and end on time, but it's a very well-managed meeting. There was a physical education curriculum update given by Gay Murray and Carrie Norton. Gay is a Ben Franklin PE teacher, Carrie over at Lincoln, and give a really interesting update on the kind of work they want to do in updating the curriculum. A lot of it around standards-based. They have an essential standards chart. If we remember when music did their presentation and how they laid that out with the essential standards, PE has done the same thing. And it's moved from a skill unit perspective to really fitness components. And lots of visual aids, building in vocabulary. I mean, really trying to do much broader work like other faculty in the buildings around building in the learner characteristics. So just a lot of energy. It was really interesting to hear. And we haven't had a curriculum update in a while from, you know, at that perspective. So that was great. Technology, they did warn me as a board member would be a piece of their request moving forward so that they can put more technology in the gyms and use that for their children, students. We went over the scorecard, the district scorecard, and identified areas that we want to update in terms of the indicators. Again, still aligned to the long-range plan. It was a very good small group discussion, and then we did a debrief. And so I'm excited because we hear a lot tonight about metrics. And we've got a lot of really good data metrics that we use that, unfortunately, I don't think get out there as widely as they probably should. So we're working on that. Learner characteristic evidence collection, which is about an ongoing conversation. Well, it's finally been decided that next year for 2013-14, correct me if I'm wrong, that they're going to roll out the next 10 learner characteristics on top of the 10 that are out there, so that we can keep building.
For the posters,
right?
Yeah.
For posters and for having it be ubiquitous in the schools. And reinforcing the first 10, but then building on these next ones and building it more into the curriculum. And that was CIT. Ann and I attended LEND on Friday morning. Nothing brand new. Again, continuing conversations with new iterations of the pension reform, but pretty much the same information. And then, I don't know if anybody else did, but I got a note from our new state representative, Deb Conroy, out of Villa Park, about education citizen advisory committee that she's starting. Did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it just went to, I don't know, whatever, president secretary, because we have to open mail. I don't know. But anyway, the meeting was tonight at 6 o'clock. I sent her an email thanking her on behalf of the board and wanting to get more information about what she's doing and, you know, kind of what the discussion is around a citizen advisory committee, so we will update that. And then finally, Tara and Maureen and I are going to do an evaluation of Rain Associates and the search process, since to be transparent about certainly a pretty large contract and how we felt they operated. They do not have, Rain Associates, a formal structured evaluation, which I found a little surprising since it was a contracted service. So we put together a simple template. And again, if board members have any just anecdotal comments or whatever it might be, please just pop them to me, and we're happy to build those into the review. And we'll make sure we get a draft out to everybody before it goes anywhere.
Could you send a reminder to us to send our comments?
Absolutely.
Do we do that for all our vendors?
All our vendors? No.
Is there a reason why we're doing it?
Well, I called Mary Fassbender to find out how they wanted to close out the process, because, to be honest with you, I felt like we were just, because it kind of was over and there wasn't any closure, and I felt it was important to have some kind of, you know, closing conversation. And she said that typically what they what clients have done is simply to write a letter talking about what they, you know, how they appreciated the service or not or whatever. I mean, her point, her comment was that typically it's a letter of recommendation, which, you know, it may very well be on our behalf, but I don't want to make those assumptions. And so since they do accept feedback, I thought we could do that in a way that was a little more structured. So we'll take a look at that.
Request.
Yeah.
Also with the summary, what the total cost was, you know, we had.
Mm-hmm.
Fee we paid them plus expenses, just in case someone from the community says,
mm-hmm.
What did it cost?
Right. I did review Dr. Gordon's expenses to make sure that they were aligned from, you know, time to time in terms of meals and hotel and that kind of thing, and they lined up. But yeah, that's a great point. So we'll include that with a report as well, and we'll get a reminder out. Thanks, Dan. All right.
I need to finance real quick.
Mm-hmm.
We had four issues on the finance committee that happened at 6 o'clock earlier today. Two of them were requests that will ultimately go into the full board. One is a printer refresh.
Mm-hmm.
Our printers are on a 5-year rotation, and it's time to replace them with new printers. The other one is a purchase and an implementation of a module of Skyward relating to a keypad that tracks when people come in and come out. The other two were a little more perfunctory. One was the class size targets, which will be presented to Ann, later today, and Bob's 2013 mid-year financial report, mm-hmm. which basically indicate that we are on track in terms of our budget. No surprises.
Thank you, Drew. Anything else?
I attended the February 25th Monday night board meeting where we discussed the think tank proposal.
So,
thank you. John?
No new news on the policy committee, as I understand it, other than we are ready to move on to section one and our next scheduled meeting, which will be determined. I went to musical, Dan and I actually, and I don't know who else went to musical mayhem, and I can't remember what that was.
The glass.
February 15th.
The day after my birthday.
I want to congratulate all the participants and all the winners, and I would be remiss if I did not especially congratulate my daughter Madeline, who with her partner Lindsay Hahn were the winners of the fifth grade duo
lip sync
portion of the lip sync
competition. Excellent. That's hard to do.
Congratulations, Dad.
Last year she was a second place finisher. This year she's a first place finisher. So she's very excited.
Where does she go from here?
She goes to the
Super Bowl halftime.
Anything on Friday you're doing?
All my age class.
I'm sorry?
Anything you're doing on Friday night? I'm not sure.
This Friday night?
Isn't it?
Oh, Spellapalooza?
Is it this Friday?
Yeah. Spellapalooza. I'm a judge again for the many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And we have teams at all of our schools represented.
Who's the MC this year?
Chief Norton.
You always a hoop. All right. Well, thank you for all the board reports.
I was trying to think the person who said, what am I doing Friday night?
Motion.
Anything else? Other? No other? Discussion items. Class size targets, which we have a report from Lori Campbell on.
The class size targets are really essentially the same as we've asked in the past. We did indicate in there, and you heard in some of the conversations tonight about whether or not we might look at asking for an adjustment at the think tank. I mean, for the think tank recommendations, perhaps to be implemented where there are odd sections. But we really need to analyze that in terms of what that would mean in terms of ultimate class size. So we have nothing formal in light of that recommendation. We would still want to look at lower class sizes where schools have not made AYP for 2 years in a row.
Which would be like Churchill and...
Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Assuming Lincoln doesn't make AYP this year. Yeah. All right. And our next item is the calendar, dress calendar. Want to thank Dan for working with the calendar committee. I would emphasize this is still a draft and that some of our constituent groups are still discussing the recommended calendar, but you'll notice that the calendar is very similar to last year's calendar. The major difference would be that we're starting school just a little bit later to align with Glenbard, and that we're starting on a Monday. Which we haven't done in a long time. But otherwise, the calendar really reflects the same kind of look at 5-day weeks, having our SIP days and
one extra
5-day week this year. SIP days scattered in the same manner, November conferences, the day before Thanksgiving as a non-attendance day. And I think otherwise it's pretty close, pretty much the same.
Do we have any feedback on President's Day? Did anybody show up at school?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Any complaints?
No complaints on President's Day. We had complaints when we were in school on President's Day.
Okay, good.
So the only request I have of the calendar committee is, it's a draft, right? Is to take a second look at November 1st, in that it's the day after October 31st.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally enjoyed that day off, as well as some folks that I know and have talked to. And because of the late nights of the Halloween, and the kids are out late, and they're eating candy, and maybe they're not at their best the day after that.
So you'd like it to be a non-attendance day?
I would like it to be a non-attendance
day. talked at length about that. I can't, there was a...
We didn't want to break up conferences between a Monday and a Friday.
How about a Friday and a Friday?
I'm not sure. Well, that would break into reducing our five-day weeks. Yeah.
Well, I would sacrifice that five-day week for the better good of the children of the district after a candy-filled long night prior to the
Maybe you, yeah, you can restrict the chunk of candy your children eat. But that's the whole parent's responsibility.
Well, maybe I'll just keep my kids on my candy
was in the 70s.
Worthy question.
I'll take it under advice.
So
thank you, calendar committee man.
I expect the full report of the next meeting on my request.
Appreciate that, Sam. Thank you, Dan, for serving again. All right. Upcoming meetings, March 11, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting here at Hadley. Again, this is a location change to be back here on the 11th. Also, March 9th, I know that most of, if not all of us, are able to attend the community forum that will be held here at Hadley on March 9th, 8:30 to 10. And then April 8th, 2013, the Board of Education regular meeting back at the Central Services Office. And elections are April 9th. April 9th,
reverse that.
Elections.
Anyway. And when's the...
Is my term over?
No, Juan.
One
kid's still with us.
When they're sworn in?
It has to be before May 7th, so we can't
do it. Meeting, yeah. So they'll be up. We'll...
It has to be between the end of April and May 7th.
Yeah.
Until the end of April to October.
So we'll have a special meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We'll count the days and then we'll send you a date. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's get that out sooner than later then, yeah, I suppose. To. All right.
Do we have the dates of the school, individual school meetings?
What we know is that March 6th will be Franklin, Lincoln, and Churchill, and... Is Forest Glen March 7th? March 7th at Forest Glen.
I cannot make any of those.
No, they're on the 6th, I think, yeah. I think he was the first to say the 6th.
Yeah. Franklin, Churchill, and
Lincoln.
I will do my best to attend the one on the 7th only because I teach on the evenings of this on Wednesday night, so I won't be able to attend those.
Is Forest Glen on the 7th and the others are on the 6th?
Correct.
And they're at 7 p.m.?
I couldn't tell you that.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to guess they're at 7 p.m., but they have not sent out their invitation.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good question. All right. Steve, thanks for staying with us. I know it's late where you are. Public participation. Are there any members present who would like to speak to the board? Seeing none, we have no adjournment to closed session tonight. Meeting adjourned. What time is it? 11:20. All in favor?